Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Welcome to Weekend Confirmed. My name is Garnet Lee, and we are glad that you are here to join us today. Hopefully you're also over checking us out on shacknews.com, where you can get in on the comments, because that's how you join in with the show. It's the plan. You're smiling. Death's just gone on, smiling at me silently.
Yes. And waiting to be introduced politely.
Well, the fabulous Mr. Jeff Cannata is with me to my left.
Two N's, one T.
Hey, people like that. That's a very good sign-in. I like that
I appreciate that quite a bit.
That is an excellent sign-in. And our Canadian is back again, Mr. Zav Damatis.
What's up, fellas? How you doing?
How long do you get to claim Canadian status until you...
I think they've already burned everything I own over there, so I think, yeah. They just put on my parents' front lawn. And
that was pleasant. That was very nice of them.
And it's environmentally safe.
The lovely Miss Andrea Renee is here as well.
Hello.
Welcome back. Thank you.
Always a good time hanging out with you fellas.
Now star of her own individual channel full of video goodness.
Yes, Clever Games. It's so much fun and it's awesome and it's new. So come visit me on YouTube.
And what
Double
shows?
Double V, Clever with two Vs.
That's clever.
Isn't it?
I know. What shows are you making?
Well, right now we're primarily focusing on news, but we have a lot of fun stuff like in the pipeline ready to launch once we can get some more bodies in the building. Need more help over there.
Just bodies.
Yeah, you know, like dead ones.
That's good.
All zombie content.
Yes.
Nice.
Just wall-to-wall zombie
content. That
would
be genius.
That would be excellent. While we're doing announcements, I'd also like to throw a little love to the guys over at GamerDork.net. So it's the guys I met about 3 or 4 years ago, did on their podcast once. They're super nice. They're out of Scotland, and I always mispronounce Glasgow. Glasgow?
Glasgow, I think.
Glasgow. Anyway, Glasgow. Yeah. So anyway, they are doing a...
Es Glasgow, I think. I don't know.
I wasn't going to
I just offended everyone.
You did. You did a good job.
Again, that is shacknews.com for all the comments and complaints.
No, that's totally radshow.com for those complaints. Anyway, they're doing a game up weekend in July, and they're doing it as a charity for the Children's Hospice Association of Scotland, and they're calling this a little shindig the Dorkapalooza.
Nice.
So that's July 9th and 10th in Glasgow, and you can get more information on that at gamerdork.net. So if you're around Scotland, or I guess the northern part of the United Kingdom, go hang out on the first weekend in July, and it'll be more fun than not. I don't know. I was trying to think, what would be more fun than? It'll be more fun than, I don't know.
Lilith Dork?
Lilith, yes. It'll be more fun than Lilith Dork.
I'm doing a Dorkapalooza.
Nice.
I'm doing a shows from the 90s that toured while I was in high school. Anywho.
Dorkfest 2011.
Yeah.
With headliners like... I don't know who the headliners be.
You really walked into this one with no way out.
Anyway, the good news is it's for Children's Hospice Association of Scotland, so check that out at gamerdork.net. All right, on with the show. Today on the show, we have Hello Ninja back for the music. There's time with Fever, We Love You. We have all sorts of games. We'll have plenty of Brink talk, obviously. Been playing lots of Brink. We also will have other games. I saw Dark Souls. We have Gatling Gears. We have Zav, who's been playing Deus Ex. Lots of anticipation for that.
Yeah.
We will talk about the continuing PlayStation Network outage, and we will definitely get to MH Silver's comment from last week about our favorite new IPs of this generation.
One of my favorite new IPs might be getting a sequel of sorts in the news segment.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Game announcements. We have plenty of game announcements coming, and including that one that debuted last night on Game Trailers Television, which has got a lot of people excited. So we'll get all of that and more coming up on Weekend Confirmed.
But first,
the news. No, not the news. We don't do the news first, but it just sounded like a great lead.
It's just a traffic on the ones.
Right. We might as well dive right into Brink.
Yeah.
I was super excited about Brink all of the times that I saw it leading up to its release. And I think that it's a interesting case study if you're interested in this sort of stuff, which I'm really not going to talk about a lot here, but maybe we'll talk about some in the comments if you want to know, about the difference between trying to preview a game and just seeing the slices of it that you see and then the reality. Because there's a lot of stuff that did come out after release that is much more evident in playing in large scale and much more evident in playing with like a larger sample than just sitting down with a bunch of people who understand the game and know how to play it. Because my overall take on the game, and I'm interested to see what you guys think, is that it's Achilles' heel to me is that it has so many things, it has so many like moving parts to it that it's almost inevitable that it fails in various stages along the way and can't deliver. Like when it does what it does well, it's really fun, but it can't just consistently do that because there's so many moving pieces that something like gets out of sync and doesn't work right.
Explain to me why it has more moving pieces than any other multiplayer game.
Oh, okay. So you've got a number of linear objective series through every game mm-hmm. with side objectives, and you're playing every game with a full roster, which necessitates having a number of bots. Mm-hmm. And you
not necessarily. If you play on competitive mode, you can make it so that you only play with human players, and it limits it to 5 people.
She looks very excited about that. She's like, look, I got you. Poke, poke, poke.
No, I'm okay. Serious. It makes a huge difference when you're playing online. I mean, you know, you and I played a couple matches together.
Does that clean up the lag code?
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely.
That's interesting.
It does.
Because one of my suppositions about the lag was that it had a lot to do with how much work it was having to do on the client side to figure out what all the bots were doing. But the rest of the story is that then you've got all of the you've got the weapons and the weapon customization system, mm-hmm. and then you've got the classes and the class customization system and the class requirements for different objectives. So you have all of these interacting systems going on at the same time, most of the time, with a combination of real people and bots, all in an internet setting. So that's a lot of different things that are all going on there.
Yeah.
Like Call of Duty, is that a comparator?
Yeah, sure. I mean, Call of Duty, you have people with different perks, you know, have customized characters, customized weapon loadouts.
Sure. How about Bad Company? Bad Company too. That's an even, you know, that's a linear progression sort of game, right? But if you think about it, each step of the way, the objective remains the same. Get to spot A, blow it up.
Right.
So this game has many more things that you have to do. You know, go and hack a safe. Okay, after you've hacked a safe, then get whatever's in the safe and carry it someplace.
But it really is a common set of multiplayer objectives that are just butted back up against one another. It's
right.
Do an escort mission, and then after that, usually that's the end, but, you know, it's capture a point on the map, then hold that point for a certain amount of time, then bring something to another point on the map. I mean, it's things you've done in multiplayer games all over the years, over and
yes.
over.
But
and
how, so, sorry, but how is this any different from Enemy Territory, you know, Quake Wars, or Enemy Territory Wolfenstein? They were the exact same thing.
Same developer.
They had the same developer, same moving parts, and it doesn't seem like they're getting any better at doing it.
Yeah, so to answer both questions, but to address Jeff's sort of first, yes, it is the same things butted up against one another, but like that's, so I was talking about fail state problems, and I think one of the fail state problems is that, yes, they're all like, so yeah, they're all like, here's this one, and then there's a butt up, and like, I'm drawing a picture, but it's like, I wish you could see the picture, but like, here's an event, like there's an event, right? And
sure.
that, and once you hit that event, then the next objective starts.
It's like
to
a
lead
flow
to the
chart.
Next, right, to hit the next objective. The problem is that the transition that happens when that event occurs breaks the game a lot of times, because if you haven't played that map enough times that you know exactly what's happening next, you're trying to decipher, oh, okay, well, what's the next thing that we do? And I found people who played the games a few times, like I'm playing in public matches and I'm like, guys, like, why are you not listening to what's going on over your headset? He's telling you that the next thing we have to do is pick up the briefcase and carry it.
Well, you're not listening because they're constantly shouting stuff at you. I've seen an enemy. They've taken our command post. We've recaptured the command post. I spotted an enemy. Like, it's nonstop.
You know, they don't really
communicate
sound like
on
that.
The battlefield. You got to communicate.
You were making an argument.
No, they don't sound like that because
but you
no
were
girl
making
characters.
The argument.
You're right. And I gave Richard Hamm, the creative director over there at Splash Damage, a really hard time about that, which I think think we previously talked about on this show. Like,
it seemed like at GDC, when we were talking about the show at the GDC show, you were talking about this game during the GDC show.
Yeah.
You were talking about how the way that they've set up the communication actually really benefited the way that people were going to play it. Now it sounds like it's that overlay that you were talking about and sort of hyped about isn't working.
No, it worked for me, but it doesn't seem to work for the general population. Well, so, unfortunately, it seems that, you know, despite the fact that I thought it was a really good idea and working well, that it doesn't seem to click with people. It's still not as intuitive as it needs to be for someone just to hop in and play some games. Because at the end of the day,
is that the problem, or is that they just blatantly ignore goals and want to just play deathmatch all the time?
That's just a player tendency thing. But if you just want to do that, why would you buy Brink?
I don't know, because it's the new hotness.
I wanted to buy Brink.
Realize no, that's that there actually... is no deathmatch mode.
Right. I mean, I wanted to play Brink because I love Enemy Territory.
Yeah.
And you know, it just to me, it seems like there are all those working parts that you mentioned don't seem to be meshing together very well for this particular game. I mean, besides the technical issues that they're suffering from right now.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems like a lot of people. There are people in our community at Shaq News that are talking about how they like the PC version and they're having fun with it. But it hasn't clicked for me. I've only played for a little bit of time, but it hasn't clicked for me the same way that Enemy Territory did.
I think it gets more fun the more you play. But I also kind of agree that you shouldn't have to watch like a long series of training videos to know how to play. But the other side of the coin on that argument is, well, games shouldn't be super easy all the time. I mean, part of the aspect of the gameplay is utilizing all the different, you know, facets of the gameplay to be successful in your objectives.
Yeah, I think this discussion started with sort of a given that I'm not entirely certain I agree with, which is the given is that we're all on the same page that it just doesn't work, right? You kind of started this off, well, you know, and we started talking about why things don't work, and I'm not sure how you completely
on that
page.
I'm coming from more from a technical aspect of it. Like I haven't played the game itself enough to actually come up with a cohesive argument as to whether or not I like it or not. I just think it's not clicking with me right now because I haven't played it enough. There's some technical issues as to why that I haven't played that enough. But for me, it's not a matter of whether or not I don't think all those working parts move or work together, you know, succinctly. To me, it's not working for me at this moment. I think that as soon as it starts to work a little bit better and it's a little cleaner across all of the platforms, then maybe people will start to enter it. And they'll get out of that mentality of team deathmatch of like, oh, there's a guy, I got to go kill him, instead of, you know, 5 feet away from me is the objective I'm supposed to capture.
Right.
There is a mentality. There's like training your customer, essentially. They need to do a better job of training the players and what needs to happen throughout the entire experience.
So, Jeff, you like to answer your question for me is that I really like the game. And so I'm very much in this like, 3 days after release phase now of trying to figure out how I really liked the game leading up to its release and still see the fun part of it, but I appreciate where the problems are, and I'm trying to like process through my head like, okay, if I was the game designer or playing game designer here, how do I break this thing down about what isn't connecting with the audience the way I thought it would connect with the audience, and how could we get it to connect with the audience? Mm-hmm. And so I think part of it what concerns me is that part of it might just play to like what your quick comment there was, why buy Brink because it's the new hotness. So maybe there simply is a portion of the audience for whom it's just not their thing. Like their jam is, I want to get on Call of Duty, and at most I want to go hold a control point and score some points.
Yeah.
Other than that, I just want to run around and shoot people in the face.
Yeah, the Halo mentality. I think that people are, if they're coming into it thinking that it's Halo, they're not going to have fun.
Right. And I really agree with you in saying that I've actually been having a lot of fun with the game, but I also recognize that it does have, you know, a number of problems, and that the first-person shooter community at large is kind of like rejecting it. But I think that's maybe one of the reasons why I really like it, because I'm not very skilled in first-person shooters, like guys that get on Call of Duty and play for 5 or 6 hours every single day. And that's what I think is great about Brink, because it's not really about how fast can you line up your sights and shoot somebody down. It's about, well, using strategies to go through the map, get the objectives, go for secondary objectives, help your teammates. Really, that's the, if you just ran around the map and buffed all your teammates, you could come out with the most experience points.
Definitely.
Like, you wouldn't even need to shoot anybody. You wouldn't even need to try to take an objective. Right. You could just go around giving people ammo, giving them health syringes, buffing their guns, and you could come out on top.
That's pretty much how I play.
You know, I didn't, this never clicked with me now, but I realize now that Team Fortress 2 never really found a presence on the Xbox 360 or PS3.
No, not at all.
I mean, no one is in that community anymore. TF2 on PC, completely different story. Even from the beginning, even though the game is very different now than it was when it launched, I think that people realized how to play that game a little bit more. The objectives that went with playing that game, it wasn't just a team deathmatch game. I think that maybe on PC, Brink has a way better chance of doing a lot better. Because, at least with the PC version, you have that audience from TF2 who still plays that game very regularly and will realize, okay, this is not a team deathmatch game. This is a game where you have to capture these objectives. A game like that, I don't think, has done very well on console, on the Xbox Series. Well, the last time they tried it was Quake Wars. Didn't work out for them either.
Well, I feel like we've gone down the road of this conversation without even establishing our terms. I'm not...
60 days, 0.9% APR, $1,000 down.
Well, I'm going to negotiate with you, sir. I feel like there's this presumption of you know what there are problems with this game. And are we talking about problems with how people play it or with the game itself? You know, everything we've been talking about is like, well, people have.
So the
have
answer
a hard
to that question, I think, is yes. But how do you differentiate the two? Because,
well, it's interesting because I had three very distinct experiences with this game.
Okay.
One was when I first got it, which was before the game was released to the general public.
Yeah.
And I played it almost exclusively with a whole boat of bots. And that was one very specific kind of experience playing this game. It was a recognition that the bots, for the most part, are really dumb.
Yep.
No, they're not.
They are. They're awful.
They are so not.
You're
so wrong.
There were maps that I literally could not win
because you're not very good.
I had nothing to do with it. I was a tiny part of a huge team that was unwilling to do a certain number.
And you were facing another team that was made of bots. See, here's the thing about the bots is that the bots are really a big issue in this game, I think.
Yeah.
First of all, you deal with them quite often. I think that they have a difficulty issue in that when they're not. When the game's not turned up to a higher difficulty, the bots have a hard time toning themselves down to where the game doesn't play itself. If you turn the game up to a higher difficulty, you'll see that the bots are doing basically everything that they need to and that you need to do, that a player needs to do in the game. They're using buffs. They're changing classes.
Oh, yeah. I'm not arguing with that. I'm saying that there were certain objectives that when we would get to that point, they were... their group mentality, individually, they're all doing the correct things.
Yep.
I would get buffed. They would, you know, set landmines. They would do all the things that they need to do. But as a group, I need everybody to go, we all need to be on the guy who's carrying the briefcase.
Yes.
Right.
Get there.
So
that's what you do with humans.
So now, go back to your original statement. It's not that the AI is bad individually. It's that the way the AI is given so much autonomy and has so much to deal with doesn't always work in the context of waking a game.
Okay. I mean, I think that's a semantic difference. But basically, I got to a certain point where it's like, guys, I need you all to be on the same page with me. Oh, wait, you're not human.
See, so I've had that same – I had that situation happen a couple of times. And then all of a sudden, like, I'll replay it. And for whatever reason, the AIs will come to the right conclusion of what needs to happen next and play the game the way I would need a teammate to play it. And I think that this is like one of the stumbling blocks they have in their single player side is that in their effort to keep things understandable and easy for everybody, they didn't include any mechanism for you to give any direction to your AI team.
Right.
There's no like, dudes, rally to me. Dudes, go and get like
stay on the briefcase, dude.
Like, you've got that wheel that you pull up. You ought to be able with some other button press to be able to like point to one of those objectives and tell your dudes, I need you to go, you know, I need two people to go get the command supply post because we need extra supplies. Or I need three dudes to cover me right now because I'm trying to make the run.
Right.
Right. You need to have that because otherwise it's just AIs doing their thing, which I think is the problem you're describing.
Yeah. I'm making a break. I went and got the the data code or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I'm making a break for it, and no one's covering my ass. And I get to the objective, and there's 40 of the bad guys standing there, and none of my teammates are around.
Well,
and
the problem is you were on the wrong side of the group AI that worked.
I guess.
Well, and that's the other side of it, is I think that they are doing two different tuning things, because it does seem like the enemy AI, when you're playing against bots, plays at a higher level than the cooperative AI. And maybe that's just perceptive.
Absolutely.
Maybe that's perception.
I really felt that way too. Like, I've played a number of times now, and I really felt like every time I went into a mission, even when I wasn't playing with other humans, I was playing just with bots, that I felt like I couldn't ever win. Like, no matter what I did, I was like, how is it so difficult to kill them, but it's so easy for them to kill me?
Mm-hmm.
I just felt like so frustrated with that all the time. And that's why I really recommend to people who are having trouble with the game and who want to give it another shot to play exclusively with human players. And when you go down to five people, you really can only have one person for each class. And then there's like a one person to kind of rotate.
Depending on what you
need
to do.
And then you really have to work together as a team collectively to accomplish your objective.
Does the game set that up for you? Like, oh, you already have an engineer in your team, so you can't be an engineer?
Or No, you can change your class at any time.
So, but I guess my fear would be that everyone wants to be the soldier, and we need an engineer on this team, guys. Like, you know, is there ever a situation where that comes into play?
It'll give you a mission objective to change your class sometimes.
Oh, okay.
It'll dynamically say, hey, it's probably a good idea for you to change your class.
Well, at least the game does that. I mean, honestly, I have not played the game enough.
To your single player thing also, one of the... and maybe it was happenstance by the way it fell. One of the things that I found was if I shifted my thinking to like trying to be a team player with the rest of the team and like paid attention to the mini map and paid attention to what the guys were calling out in my ear and didn't maybe I know the map and maybe I know that honestly the best route for me to take or the most efficient route to get to an objective is a left flank. Mm-hmm. But I look at the mini map and like two dudes are off capturing a command post and the rest of them are all on the right hand run. If I go off on the left, I'm by myself.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of going off on the left and getting frustrated that they're not there, going to the right and getting into the mix with my group and then trying to push forward with them.
But they should have enough awareness to know, oh, there's only a minute and a half left of this mission. We shouldn't be capturing command posts anymore.
That's probably true.
You know what I mean?
Agreed,
But let me explain.
But the fact that the bots can play such a complicated game is kind of an interesting thing in itself.
No, it's certainly playable at that level. But I ran into certain missions. Certain missions were really fun and I was having a blast.
Yep.
And there were other missions where it's like, you know what? Two of these objectives we can do and one of them, they just can't.
Back to my thing
it.
About a lot of moving pieces and some of them break in a game can't deliver that fun moment consistently.
But let me explain my other two experiences with the game. So I had that before the game was released. Then, like day of release, I had this window of the early adopters that I seemed to be playing with where I would have like three or four people in my party that were humans and the rest were bots.
Yeah.
And that was incredible. That was an amazing experience because the humans could outthink the bots. And mm-hmm. we were playing, and all the missions that I wasn't able to pass before, I was like, well, I'll select that mission because I'm with this awesome group, and we knocked them out.
Mm-hmm.
Then, a couple of days after release, or the day after release, as the pool of potential players grew, I was in situations where it was the entire, both teams were other humans, and then it was just chaos. Then it was just deathmatch, weird chaosness, which... To be fair, is what most multiplayer games are.
Yeah.
And reason I don't play a lot of online multiplayer anymore is because it gives me a headache. There's no cohesion. And I assume that if I had gone in with a group of people that I knew and we could all communicate, it would work better.
Yeah, you know if you join a game with your friends, then it puts you on what it calls a fire team, and you do have voice chat with your friends.
Mm-hmm.
And if your friends join a game, then they have voice chat with you.
So I assume, obviously, as with any multiplayer game, that will be a better experience than just playing with random people. But I was hoping, as you had said weeks ago, that this game kind of would sidestep that whole issue and create dynamic things on the fly, which it does do. It does do those things.
It just can't make people do them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think another part of that is that as much as I wanted to believe how well that quick mission wheel would work, it doesn't lead you to it quite well enough. It tells you a couple times, yeah, press up and we'll give you the most pressing, you know, most valuable mission for you to go on right now. But it's not, I don't know. There's another layer of impetus that's just not there. There's something that like needs to push me there, but then also push me there and help me understand what it is that I'm doing and why I'm doing it, and be it quick and easy. And a lot of times, like, the descriptions are weird, like guard the guy or whatever. Well, actually, what you're doing is trying to prevent the other team
exactly.
from getting to the
and
guy.
And you're getting a countdown, and you're like, oh, good, it's counting down. It's like, no, that's bad.
Yeah.
It's very indistinct as to whether or not the countdown is good for you or bad for you.
There's a number of layers of feedback in the UI that I think could have been improved. And then all of this said, I do really like the game.
I like it a lot, too.
And I think it's going to get better as time goes on, because I think a lot of the death matchers that you're talking about will either decide that they'd like to try to learn how to play the game and play the game, or they'll be like, fuck this thing. This is a piece of
there'll
shit.
New,
I need it.
There'll be a next new hotness.
That's why I went TF2 on Xbox 360 and PS3.
I also want to say that I'm disappointed with the idea of a campaign in this game. You know, bookends of talking heads on either side of multiplayer missions does not a single player campaign make.
Thank you for saying that. I was going to go into that later if no one else brought
it
up.
It's got a story. It's the,
no,
it
does you, not you don't know who any of those characters are. That's the only guy you know. You
Brother
don't
Chen.
You don't know any of anybody else. You don't connect to any of those characters.
There's the dude with the nose.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point.
Oh, the dude with the
it's
nose is
a,
in it?
It's not a story.
Yeah, they got him. They got him.
They got him.
Yeah.
I mean, I just wanted a couple more cinematics where I'm not worried about having to change my loadout.
And not only that, but the cinematics are terrible. They're like guys sitting on something talking. Mm-hmm. Sitting on a boat talking. Sitting on a helicopter talking.
Sweet
sitting
boat,
on a...
though.
And it's like, what is this? It isn't anything.
It has something to do with
the
arc.
And you can play it in any order, which is good for the way the game is built, mm-hmm. in the sense that I don't want to do the same mission over and over, fail it, not be able to do anything else.
Right.
But that's not a campaign.
Right.
There's nothing satisfying about that. And then you have these what if scenarios. It's like, what if what? I don't have any idea what happened.
You really don't get the what ifs?
I like them
theoretically,
in concept.
They replicate what if the other side won a mission that the other side's...
But if almost playing... every time I played a mission, the other side won it at one point or another.
But I mean,
so what if you didn't suck at the game?
Yeah, no, it means like what if the win condition were them win anyway.
I get it. I get what they are. I love, you know, Marvel did What If. I love that too.
Slightly different.
But I think that's a really cool idea that other games should steal. But when I'm not connected to the outcome of these stories,
I agree with you. The campaign was a miss, and I think maybe the reason we get frustrated about it is we sort of get a glimmer of, wow, it'd be really like they have a cool idea here. They're going to make multiplayer game that has story around it, and I'm going to actually care.
Yeah.
And then it quickly becomes a, here's your narrator. Here's a choose your own adventure.
Right.
Here's the beginning.
Not even that.
Yeah. It's not even choose your own adventure. It's like, here's the beginning, and here's what you're going to do to go win. Bye. Go have a good time.
And the other big feature that this game was touting was that context-sensitive parkour run-over-everything thing, which I think is completely marginalized.
Smart movement.
It's completely...
marginalized. I love it. It's fun.
Really?
Yeah.
You have to, it really takes practice to get good at it, and not all of the maps are suited for it.
I think having any kind of actual single-player campaign would highlight that feature.
You know what?
In the multiplayer context, it just doesn't matter.
They have the challenge levels that kind
of
teach
totally
you.
Oh, dude, it matters.
Really?
Well, yeah.
Just one sec. There are those challenge levels that kind of teach you how things work, and the one for the parkour stuff is, all right, go and do it. Like, that's all it tells you. It doesn't really give you any kind of idea of how it works. Like, you don't really know that you can run off walls and jump off walls and
stuff.
You
can only run off walls if you're the light
guy. The light guy, which is the default at that point anyway.
No, that's
medium.
You have to earn light.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you can, but when you're actually doing the parkour stuff in the actual tutorial, it doesn't really give you any explanation as to how it works. It just sort of tells you go and touch these lights. It doesn't really explain to you how the system works itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can run, and then as you're sprinting, you could slide underneath cover and stuff. It doesn't really explain stuff like that to you. You can like learn it as you're going on. That's why I think the game will get better over time. But in the beginning, and like I played on the PC, and the tutorial video in the PC is hilarious. In the beginning, it tells you this was actually made for console players. You can watch it too.
Yeah, that is bizarre.
But they're probably morons, and you are probably,
you know,
smart.
What I mean? Yeah. So, and then if you want to get those extra 1,000 XP points in order to watch the video, you get those points. You have to watch that. What is it? 35 minutes. That thing was an epic. I think James Cameron directed that.
You don't have to watch the whole thing. I bowed out at about 15 minutes.
Oh, really?
And I still got the 1,000 experience. All
right.
Points.
So before we close up the Brink Tank, we kind of have to talk a little bit about performance. And Zav played some PC. I played some PC. And one of the things that was hopeful about PC is PC is has dedicated server support. It also, interestingly, has a server browser window, unlike the Xbox version. I'm kind of torn on this because I think that there's things that's cool about the way the Xbox version sets up its, you know, like you don't know whether you're playing with real people or not kind of thing. But I also like the idea of a game that's so team that in its end didn't turn out being quite so, you know, pushing the boundaries that I can just go and make. I want to go play that map with these guys and go home. Yeah. Because that actually winds up working pretty well. Lag. It's a problem.
It's a problem.
This game seems to have some sort of inherent netcode problem, and I was hoping it would be fixed on dedicated servers, and it's much better. Like, there are games that I've joined on the dedicated servers that had absolutely no problems, but there's still been games on PC that had that same rubber banding thing. Like, you come into the command post to start off, and it's like you jump forward, jump back, jump to the side. You're all over the place.
Yeah. But yeah, I agree. It's a problem, and it's
bad. That's a broken technology.
And it's in news real quick, but they have patched it on the PS3 and on the Xbox 360 and the PC in order to fix some of that stuff.
Is that a second patch? Because they had a day. No,
this is the day one patch. This is the day one patch.
The story that came out today was a secondary patch.
They're doing the secondary patch because they're investigating the lag issues that people are experiencing. What I want to know is how is the game performing on the PSN? Everyone was waiting to make that joke in the comments. I thought I'd make it for them.
All right, I tell you what. In the news section, I will let you talk all about the PSN that you want to, and we will have all of that and more when Weekend Confirmed for blah 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 blah. When Weekend Confirmed continues on the other side. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from ShackNews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from Weekend Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices. Hey, welcome back to Weekend Confirmed.
Was that an ad for the game flap? It's going to catch on.
Did you see the image that was made for us?
Yeah.
Put it in your game flap.
I think it should have two P's.
Cruel Legacy.
I think game flap should have two P's.
It was like gold frap, but you should put it in your game flap. Nice. Excellent.
Open up your game flap, stick a game in it.
It's so wrong.
Perfect.
It's like the original. It's like the original NES.
Yeah. The Gamefly app. See, Gamefly app. It's like Gamefly.
Okay.
Just go with it.
Okay.
Brilliant.
Open up your Gamefly.
You want people to remember your app?
Call it a Gamefly.
Call it the Gamefly.
I will get with Sean later this week and be like,
I think we should actually
rename the app. We're going to call it the Gamefly.
Dude, I'm telling you.
I envision the marketing team punching you in the mouth.
Then you need to hire a different game.
I'm reminded of a very, very old Saturday Night Live. Not very old, but like mid-80s Saturday Night Live, where they're like, they're coming with an advertising jingle for some candy bar called Nutterific. And then they decide the jingle is going to be It's Nut Very Good. Yeah, game flap right in there in that same wheelhouse.
I'm telling you, the people are speaking.
All right, well, maybe the people want to hear us speaking about some games other than Brink, because we kind of brinked it up there for
a little bit.
We went to the brink with Brink.
Pull back.
Yes. So I think I want to know about Deus Ex.
Me too.
Which Zav has been putting on my desk and going, play this, and I'm like, oh, look, Andrea's cold.
I'm glad I stole it from you, though. So I want to caveat this whole conversation with when Fallout 3 came out, I remember playing it and didn't really like it. Didn't click with me. You know, there were some problems with it. Wait, let me finish the story and stop writing
those
posts.
And then you fought a deer.
And then I fought a deer and everything changed. So I played it at first and I didn't really understand all the mechanics behind it. I didn't really connect with the game very much, and I put it aside and never wanted to play it again. Then about a month later passes, and I put it in, tried again. Maybe I was doing something wrong. And I sort of paid more attention to what was happening. I paid more attention to the environment, to the people when they were speaking to me, telling me what was happening. And I loved it. I put like 70 hours into that game, and I got all the achievements before the DLC and everything. Playing Deus Ex Human Revolution, I'm starting to get that first feeling of I don't really understand all of the mechanics that's behind it. A lot of the decisions seem to be very old school. People who play the original Deus Ex will love it. But there's parts of it that I'm not really connected with. And it's really difficult for me to sort of disconnect what I want the game to be versus what it actually is. there's some dip. I don't. Yeah, Garnet's trying to distract everyone.
No, I did distract everybody.
Yeah. So
with the fail whale.
Yeah. Well, what can you do? And but my point is this: I played it for a couple of hours. I played the first section a number of different ways. Wasn't really connecting with me, and then I put it down and sort of went back and decided to really pay attention to the mechanics. And there are a lot of different elements at play when you're playing the game. The preview code that I have actually unlocks a lot of stuff in the beginning, so it's not really the way that people are going to get it when they first get the game. They're going to have way more control over what the character is. But there's sort of a preset in the build that I have. So maybe I'm just not connected to those decisions that someone else has made. But there are so many details in the conversations that you have with people. There are so many decisions you can make when you're having when you want to make a decision. For example, there is a part in the very beginning where one of the first missions you have, I mean, it's a preview, so I guess this will spoil a section of it, but you have a hostage situation. And there are hostages within this building, and then later on you meet up, you see this person who is taking another hostage. Now, when you play this mission, you can play that first, you can save the hostages that are in a hidden area within this complex, or you could skip them and they die. And you can save this person who's being taken hostage, or you can allow the hostage taker to take that person with them. So there's so many decisions. Those are four branches in one decision. And depending on what happens in all of those elements, if you go to, for example, save those hostages, you find out one of the hostages is connected to the person who's being held at the end. And if you save them both, you get another mission later on. Hmm. Like they tell you, thank you for saving us. We will give you something later on in the game. And you go and find them. You go to their apartment, which is really weird. You can just like walk into their apartment, like don't knock the door, just walk right in. They're sitting there on the couch.
It's the future.
And then you can actually get all these little other elements. So my point is this. It's like when people play this game, if they're expecting something to be – if they're expecting an action game, it's very, very focused on reminding you what the original Deus Ex was. I think that a lot of people who play that original are really going to enjoy this one. But there are elements that you need to make sure you're paying a lot of attention to because there is a lot of detail within the game. So after playing it for a few hours, I'm actually starting to get more into it. The way that I liked Fallout 3 after trying it again, after really immersing myself, I guess, in the universe, I think that now, more than ever, I think that the game is
Why are you saying reminding you of Deus Ex? Because what you just described to me is everything that I loved about Deus Ex. Making choices, deciding how I wanted to approach things, different ways to do them, different consequences and responsibilities for your actions.
You're misunderstanding.
That's kind of RPGs in general.
Right. Though. But I mean, I think my point is that I think that people look at this, they see that Ion Storm is not involved, they see War Inspector is not involved, and they think it's going to be an action oriented game. I think that there are obviously the genre has changed a lot since the original Deus Ex is released. This game it's almost as if, and I would love for other people to play to see whether or not they think that Eidos Montreal has sort of sacrificed their own vision in order to make a game that's an homage to this classic. But for me, it reminds me of the original because I think that the original was such obviously.
It's so
a great
weird
game.
That you like term. Maybe it's semantics again, but
I think it's bizarre to me that
you're terming it as like an homage, and like it's so surprising that it's Deus Ex. Like you're telling, like it's Deus Ex, and now it's surprising that it's Deus Ex.
No, I'm not saying that for me. I'm saying that I think that there is a perception that the game is something that it's not. That people think that because the original creator is not involved, they're taking this brand and changing it. Think about Invisible War. Think about how different was.
I know, but well.
Exactly. My point is that I think people think that they are trying to do something very different with this license, but they're doing something that the original founders or the original creators would have really appreciated.
Good.
In terms of how this
the response
game works.
To Invisible War was that it wasn't.
It was terrible. It was not a very good game.
Are you saying that because this mission, we'll reference this mission that you've been describing.
Right.
So is it more that you don't go in with guns blazing and have an awesome shootout? It's more that
you're
having
that.
Discussions.
Well, there are
two
elements.
Because you have the three prongs.
Yeah, so let's say you start off the game and then you have this meeting with your boss and he asks you, how do you want to infiltrate this situation? How do you want to get this done? Do you want to go guns blazing? Do you want to be stealth? You make a decision. You get your weapons based on your decisions there. Then when you go in, if you decide to kill everyone, there's a bigger chance of you killing all those hostages by accident. If you go in stealthily, you can take out everyone, save those hostages, and then have the opportunity later on to you learned a little bit more about the actual experience. So there's a good example is that in the very beginning, you see these police officers waiting to infiltrate this complex, and you tell them, I want to go in first to see the situation. And if you don't talk to these police officers, they give you a vital piece of information about the person that you see at the very end. And I think that if you were not to speak to those police officers, you wouldn't get that piece of information and it wouldn't open up a lot of those branches of possibility. There are a lot of things that can end up happening in one mission. This is one mission, and there are four or five different ways that this one thing can play out.
It's awesome. That's what I want out of a Deus
Ex. It's really intricate. I mean, I don't want to make – maybe I sounded like I was surprised or –
You're making me hot.
Well, that's well, whatever. I don't want to sound like I don't like the game. I think that it's – I'm surprised that at first I really had a hard time getting into it. Maybe it's because I was anticipating it so much. Yeah. And then I put it down for a while and then really paid attention to the mechanics. And now it's really starting to grasp.
And when you say mechanics, you mean what? Like moment-to-moment dialogue discussion?
Dialogue. So here's a great example. The first time I played it, I got a situation that I didn't like. And I would play the Garnet Lee thing where you restart races if you don't get first place. And restarted that mission and made the decisions that I
winners
knew
win.
To be well, that's why you keep restarting. I made the decisions that I was, I thought
you,
would have
you
been
played the outcome rather than the moment,
right? But then it changed. It instead huh? of yeah. So I made the decisions opposite to the ones that I had made, but uh-huh. because I didn't get a piece of information, my discussion with that person was different, and the outcome again was different. So it changes a lot throughout the experience. And you find little data pads everywhere and diaries, and you get tiny little pieces of information. The problem that I have with the game is that you don't really get an indication that you've learned something. Like, it doesn't autosave when you know what I mean? Like, there's no indication of like, oh, that was important. The only time it ever does that is if like you find a data pad with a passcode on it, and it'll tell you like passcode entered into your.
Do you like it
database?
When a game artificially tells you, like, throws in your face, "Oh, that was an important piece, Sav. You better remember it."
Yes.
Do you like that?
Sometimes. I mean, okay. I know the hardcore Deus Ex guys are going to hate me saying that, and they're going to love the fact that you can turn off things like the highlighting, the orange highlighting. You can turn that off. You could turn off all the objective markers so you don't see where anything is.
See, and that is old school. That is a throwback.
Super, super old school.
Those are the games I grew up on, right. Is where you had to have a pad of paper and a pencil with you while you were playing.
Right.
And usually graph paper if you wanted to map something.
Mm-hmm. And I think, PC, I think there was news that, because Eidos Montreal's not developing the PC version. It's a company called Nixxis. They're doing the port for them. And a lot of people obviously were worried, oh, great, Eidos Montreal's not doing the game, so it's going to suck. But a lot of news coming out from the PC version has been really positive. I mean, there's DX11 support, there's 3D support, there's iAffinity support. They're really putting a lot into this version, I think. I'm playing on the 360. I don't think it looks especially very nice on the 360, to be honest with you. It sort of smacks of Fallout 3, kind of has a gritty look to it, and everyone kind of looks strange.
Probably a post-processing effect. I mean, everybody's into that film grain.
Maybe. Also, again, preview build. This isn't the final version of the game. Who knows?
The whole glowing thing is interesting to me because I think that, we talk about, what would you want from games in the future? I'd love to get to a point where I'm of that old school camp. I don't really want the game to artificially interrupt and say, hey, dumbass, what we just told you is really important. Remember it.
Well,
I want the game to be, I want it to be happening such that, that's an important part. I recognize it as being important.
But you see what I'm saying. The first time I played it, didn't think of it like that. I just played it and I was like, how come these things are happening? I didn't feel like I was in control of the situation. Then you pay attention to those pieces of information you get, and you can make better decisions about your character and about the situation.
I think the lesson we learned is we should pay attention right from the beginning on things.
Yeah.
Kids.
Yeah.
Kids these days with their lack of attentions.
But then some of it, some of the parts of it are really funny that remind you that you're playing a video game at all times. Like, the guy tells you, hey, come to my apartment and I'll give you something for helping me out in this situation. And then you go to his apartment and you walk right in the door, don't knock or anything. He's sitting there with his wife, doesn't say a word. And then this guy, who's a very cheerful person when you meet him, tells you, by the way, I know this gun runner who lives down the street. Like, how are you two connected in this situation at all? How do you know a gun runner? And then later on, you talk to someone, I'm going to dance around it, but you talk to someone who wants you to investigate something, and you can request rewards from people when you have conversations with them. You can say, oh, you want me to do something for you? What am I going to get out of this situation? And the person that asks you to investigate something is something that directly ties with you emotionally. And you can ask them, what do I get out of it? It's like, it's about you. Like, why are you even asking? So some of it strives to remind you that you're playing a game at all times. But I think that this is a game that I could see myself spending a lot of time with.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of aspects of it that are really reminiscent of things in Mass Effect 2. Mm-hmm. And I know I talk about that game a lot because I'm kind of a nerd for it. But now I'm more excited to play this than I was before. Thank you.
How can you not be excited to play Deus Ex?
I mean, yeah. It's
I said more excited. More being the operative word there. Were you listening?
No, not really.
I remember Dragon Age 2 being a big thing with you know, walking around a corner and seeing a chest with sparklies shooting off of it because there's something in that chest as opposed to the other chest.
Yeah.
And I've always been a big fan of the let me explore. Fallout 3 is a great example. There's stuff everywhere, and that stuff is useful to varying degrees. It's not just either it's garbage or it's the most useful thing in the world.
So,
you know,
to kind of round my point, wrap my point up in with a little bow, the first time I played it, I got to a point where you finish the first mission, you go into your office building. I had no idea where to go next, and I saw the mini map tell me, or the objective marker say, you have to go to this spot, and I got kind of lost, didn't know what was going on. Then I tried it again. Played the game again, and when I walked into the building, when you walk in the building, a PA comes on that's pretty light that says, Adam Jensen, go to your office. Like, someone's waiting for you in your office. Like, it gives you a small cue.
So you're just saying the game is subtle.
Yeah.
Which I love.
I love that. I
think that it's going to work really well. And I think some of it really is blatant and in your face. Like, highlighting everything in the world that you can interact with is really blatant and in your face. But then those audio cues, I think, are something that, if it's throughout the experience, it's going to be really special.
Yeah, these are the kind of games that I love. Getting lost in a world, getting feeling like I can go and do whatever I want to do at any given moment. I know that other people, Garnet included, feel sometimes a little overwhelmed by that. Oblivion, for example, right?
I think you're actually blending two things together there. I absolutely love a big world to be involved in. My problem with Oblivion is that somehow and actually with all those Bethesda games has been that somehow or other the primary quest line winds up getting diluted because there's so much other stuff going on. Like, I want the rich world and I want to have all these things to go do, but at the same time I want to have like some purpose. I want to be purposeful. I mean, I want to be like still like having a character adventure inside that world and having a reason that all those things are happening. Like, I like it when my side quests come back with a relatively high degree of relevancy to what I'm doing in the main quest. And a lot of Oblivion stuff is all like just, it's really cool shit, but it's just really cool stuff you go and do.
It's disconnected. It's like playing two different experiences, I think. Deus Ex, the first couple side quests that you are involved in or that have the option to select are very much tied to the opening of that game. So I think if that is sort of the thread that lines these entire events together, then you might enjoy it a little bit more than Oblivion.
How's the gunplay and like just the general action of it?
To be honest, I don't really know because I'm playing stealth in this version because it's
so when I play it, I should play Guns Blazing.
Guns Blazing. I'm going to try Guns Blazing and see how it works out and see if it's, I would never play the game Guns Blazing, so I'm not entirely sure how it would work out.
I mean, if you go back to, of course, the original Deus Ex, one of the things about it was a shooter engine, but at the same time, it was doing all that number calculation in the background. So you're putting cursors over your guys, but you're getting numbers pouring off, and you're like, oh my God, it's like all this stuff going on. And I think that they're still going for a shooter mechanic as far as that element goes in this game, right?
There is a certain element to it does count off those numbers. You could tell that it's this process in the background of like, okay, how well are you going to... It's not like one shot, one kill, it doesn't seem like. And a lot of the alert system is a little strange. Like, you will shoot a guy with the tranquilizer dart, which is the weapon that I have, and he'll get knocked out, but he'll make this noise, like this grunting noise, and alert everyone around him, and then 100 guys come out of nowhere, and you're like, how am I going to get out of this situation? You're in a bad place.
So that's kind of cool. So just because you trank dart a guy doesn't necessarily mean he just silently crumples to the ground.
No, I mean, you have to go, and then you have to grab him and drag him into somewhere, like somewhere that he won't be seen.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Every level of the levels that I've played so far, or areas, they're not necessarily levels, they have, you know, vent systems, and they all go into different spots. It's not like you go into a vent and it's like one way. It's a vent and then you have a fork in the road. And then, okay, which way am I going to go? And you can end up opening the vent into a room with like 30 guys inside of it, let's say. just because you're in that situation doesn't necessarily mean you're safe.
Guys, come in here. The air conditioning's amazing. So it's a huge vent in here. It's human size, in fact. It's a human size vent.
Yeah.
Stand under it. It's so... But it's kind of blocked right now, actually.
Can you imagine how long it takes to develop levels for these games, like for this game, just to test out all the paths through it and make sure that they all work and they're all playable and build on different strengths and weaknesses of the different character types?
If you read our previous coverage on the game on Shaq News, we interviewed Jean-Francois Dugas, who's the game director for the game, and he said that, I was asking him, I'm like, QA test for this must be a nightmare. And he was like, thankfully, the QA department for Eidos is actually in the Montreal studio. They moved everyone to Eidos Montreal in order to do the QA test. It is like, imagine,
it's
you have
monster.
The QA.
Yeah. That's what I think those Bethesoft games are like.
And then there's always that string of like, someone will make one decision and then other subsequent decisions and then find a way to break the game that they had no idea is going to happen. And it might happen with this too.
All right. Lots to look forward to on Deus Ex. I have a lot of people looking forward to Dark Souls. Did anyone play Demon's Souls?
I actively did not play Demon's
Souls. You actively did not. And yet, a lot of people thought you would like it.
I know. It's funny. They don't know me as well as I know me. I may have liked it, but I just didn't. I don't know.
I heard it was frustratingly difficult.
Yeah, that's the sort of the.
But you see, there's an interesting division line here. Is that more people than not don't include the frustrating part? You know, they just talk about how difficult the game is.
I don't know, dude. The reason I didn't play it, honestly, is because I talked to the Area 5 guys when it first came out, and all of them were like, my forehead hurts from how hard I'm hitting it against the wall.
Really? And those guys are usually ultra hardcore.
Yeah, I know. More hardcore than I am.
Interesting.
So
that's fascinating.
Yeah, that's why I was like, you know what? If that's what's the result of that, I don't want to put myself through
that. But yeah, going and looking at it, like, it won a number of awards in 2009. It became super cult following. They still, as a matter of fact, the servers are still open, and I'm really like, it's always been on that. It's like, it's been sitting in my house and like taunting me, like, you should come play me. And then of course now I go and finally see this Dark Souls demo, and I'm like, I want to go play Demon's Souls, and I realize, oh, that's right, PSN's down, so I'm going to wait until PSN comes back up, because you know, a big part of the game is this idea of helper spectral souls that you can go into. You can go into other people's games. You can also be a hindrance.
Yeah, little messages that are left, and
you can also leave messages. And they're bringing all that back in. They're doing a lot of additive work, I would guess would be the right way to describe Dark Souls, in that it's not, you know, it's not the same game world. And one of the things that they wanted to expand on and bring to the game was give it a more open architecture, give it a more exploratory feel, so you're like wandering around and feeling like you're more of an adventurer. Then the demo area that I was got to see went into the Castle of Traps.
Oh, why would anybody go in there?
Because there's stuff, dude. It's you're a mighty knight. Of course you go. The Castle of Traps, it's like it's tempting you. Like, come ahead, come on, warrior, prove your valor, prove your mettle to me. No,
it's good.
So one of the things I thought was interesting about this level is that it did really do a good job of having that labyrinth feel of, well, I can go this direction or I can go that direction. There's lots of staircases. There were rooms with antechambers, and there was absolutely no, you know, after going through the entryway, obviously that's obvious where you're headed. After you got into the meat of where the adventuring took place, there wasn't a like go here or go there sort of thing to it at all by any stretch of the imagination, which I thought was really cool. The traps were a number of you know, standard stuff. Castle of Traps, I was like, okay, you know, the bottom line of this is that basically every square foot of the thing is dangerous, you know, from whether it, like walking onto a pressure plate and having it shoot arrows at you to walking into a hallway and giant boulder Indiana Jones style is rolling down the hallway at you. But what was cool also was that there were a lot of times where just through happenstance, I could see that you would find things. Like a couple of times the producer who was demoing for me, like, intentionally, like, fell off of a ledge or something to show that. And it's like, you know, I'm going to die when I fall off this ledge. Well, actually, you're not going to die. You're going to fall into another part of the castle. And that might be a pit. It might be a trap.
So it's more like Castle of Traps?
Yes. It's like Castle of Traps. But you know, it's sort of like a discovery element there of, like, you know, I guess I get kind of accustomed to, especially a game that's like Castle of Traps, you think, oh, if I'm going down this hallway and this boulder comes at me and I fall off the edge, and that's going to be a restart to the last spawn point, which in this game, of course, is another source of frustration because you're backtracking.
And you lose all your
So does that mean
XP's.
You literally have to like throw yourself off of every ledge just in case there might be something down there?
I don't know. Are you a completionist like that?
No.
You might. I mean, I don't know that you would ever have found this pit that he fell, like this one pit that he fell into was a long way down, and I'm like, I don't know if you would ever have found this thing otherwise, because it was like the ladder that you got out was this like obscure ladder in a corner of the building, of a corner of the room. That like went up to a little bitty ledge that was off the side of a walkway. I'm like, you would never have gone down here and found it.
Was there cool stuff down there?
There was a giant pit demon that he
That's not cool.
No, it was not cool at all. And actually,
what's the point of that?
Well, he's the denizen of
Does
the pit.
Does he say, thanks for dropping by? Does he say that?
No, he looks very mean and nasty, cool. and we ran away. We ran away very quickly. it looks really fun. It has all of the same combat mechanics of Demon's Souls, where you use the triggers to control what's in your hands. Mm-hmm. So you can equip like a sword in one hand and a shield in the other. And it does have a really cool parrying move where you can like deflect with your shield, which leaves people open. Dad was making fun of me because I was talking about the snake men that attacked me.
Can you please describe what a snake man is?
Okay, so there's these reptilian snake men creatures that were in this castle of traps, and they looked like your standard reptile dudes up to the shoulders.
Your standard reptile dudes.
Standard dude, reptile dude.
Well, I mean, you know what I mean, like, you know,
yep,
like
reptilian dude,
scaly skin, yep. little lanky, but mostly anthropomorphic lizard, right?
Yeah.
Are we talking like Voldemort? Like that kind of scaly?
Yeah. Yeah, but more green and luminescent, more scaly, more lizardy.
Okay.
But then on top of their shoulders, like instead of just having like, like a snake head or something, they've got like a full on freaking snake coming out the top of their shoulders. It's like got this really long snake, it's another 3 feet up before the head of the snake.
Mm.
You're laughing. You're
no, like, I like snakes.
Then there are snake men classes as well.
Oh, yeah. There's snake. So,
oh, you
so
can be a snake man? Oh, no. There's like...
No, then there's wizard snake men. And the
He's
wizard
got a
snake
pointy
man.
Hat on top of the long
no,
neck on top of the snake.
No.
Laughing about the snake man.
He's a hooded cobra. So, like, coming out of the top of his neck is like this giant hooded cobra head, which was pretty freaking cool.
You know who could take on the snake men?
The guy.
Raptor Man.
Raptor Man.
I thought you were going to say the reader who tackled that deer the other day.
Well, probably could too.
All right.
No, that sounds cool.
So I think there's a lot to look forward to in Demon's Souls. And I think the whole idea of making it more exploratory sounds very good because, I think that, like, I go back and read, like as soon as we saw this, put this announcement on the Shack News, there were people in the comments thread talking about how many times they've run through Demon's Souls with
people
different builds.
Super hardcore about the game.
Yeah, they are super, super hardcore about it. So lots to look forward to on that. And I think they're going to have yet another new build for it at E3 since it's coming out in October.
Maybe October. I'll throw when PSN comes back up. Maybe I'll throw Demon's Souls in my game flap.
Demon's Souls, the online service for it, I think it shut down in October. So
they extended it
to October. It was supposed to extend. It was supposed to expire already. I think they extended it to October
of this year.
Of this year.
Oh yeah, until the new one comes out.
Yeah, until the new
one. That would make sense. Yeah. I'm sure that if there was as many people as they ever want to play. It's funny, actually, if you go to the game's official forums right now, there's a lot of people like, I can't play.
Right.
Wow, this is really freaking amazing. It's such a weird game process, too, of like, in Japan, it's from software. In Japan, it was published by Sony, and then it came over here on an Atlas, and then
Namco Bandai
picked up this game, and although it's still going to be published as a PS3 exclusive in Japan, it's getting a 360 version in America. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's interesting development history.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Namco Bandai published the European version of the game, so they have a little bit of a connection.
Okay, that makes sense then. And let's see, I also played Gatling Gears on XBLA, which I totally, absolutely recommend for twin-stick shooter fun.
It's fun, yeah.
It's awesome.
It's old, like, Ikari Warriors style fun.
With steampunk, like a steampunk mech.
Yeah.
I'm freaking having the most fun with this game. As a matter of fact, this might be the most fun game I've played. Like
really?
Like, yeah. Like I don't know. There's it. I think part of it is the palate cleansing thing.
Mm.
It's like you hop in with this game. It has like this cute steampunk feel to it, which like steampunk's always awesome no matter what Zav says, and he doesn't like steampunk.
Yeah, this is not the conversation we had.
He doesn't like steampunk. He's also anti-American.
I hate freedom. Apparently.
Well, that's obvious.
But it's fun. I mean, like, it's very straightforward. And you're right. It is very Ikari Warriors because it's, you know, it's top down, run through, and just destroy the shit out of everything and all kinds of crazy stuff attacking you. But I like the way, I mean, they've got it set up with a cool weapon system where you have, like, your Gatling gun and a main cannon and grenades and a lightning attack. And it's all balanced out to that. And I want to play some co-op. I really want to play some co-op.
I'll play with you.
Did you get it?
No, but
you should get it. Dude, it's so worth, like, what is it, 800 game points or 1,200 micro bucks?
There's a rule that if you have the word Gears in your title, you have to be a good game. That's a rule.
Yeah. So I like it.
It's cool. Yeah, it's cool. I played it at GDC and liked a lot. And
there's not a lot more else to say about it. I mean, other than that, it is like... It's
easy fun.
It is a great embodiment of the twin-stick shooter and the old Ikari Warriors sort of arcade cabinet have fun thing. Fills the screen with a massive amount of crap. Mm. And really cool enemies like, you know, like hang gliding flyer things that drop bombs on you and like preset mines, and you're collecting gears the whole time for the power-up system. And I really like it. Really like it. It's fun to have fun with games. Anyone else playing anything else?
I've been playing Portal 2 co-op, which co-op. I'm sure you've talked about. Yes,
we talked
co-op.
About single player last week to great extent. I'm a little sour on co-op simply because of having to start over with everybody every time you want to play through it.
Yeah, but the way that it's set up is that you can go into any room in any order up to a certain point.
Yeah, you have
point.
The hub world.
Well, from the hub worlds.
Yeah.
But you still have to unlock those with a partner, right? It's like you and I couldn't start off at the second hub world. We'd have to like...
Yes.
Right. I think that's kind of annoying.
Well,
or
you gotta
kind
stick
of
with
fun.
Your partner.
Because I think you, going back and playing with different people, it reminds me that once you pass a test chamber, you go back to it again, it takes you a little bit to remember how you passed it in the first place. At least for me, it did for certain ones. Certain ones you remember right away. Other ones, like, I had to think about it again. I was like, wait a minute, I passed this already. I know how to do this.
Yeah. I'd be game to go back.
I thought that
was
challenging. I liked it.
I think I'd be more game to go back and try and figure out what to do differently and if there's other ways to solve them. Because, like, you know, this sort of also plays into Brink, too. In these games that you play where you come back to stuff and play it over again, what's the shelf life for those? For the average player. I mean, like, for Counter-Strike players, Team Fortress players, you know, like, they want to learn and master a level. But what's the shelf life for an average, like, not even average, like for you and me? Or us, like, what's the shelf life for how long we'll play a game and not get like, okay, I'm done with it? For Portal, like, how many times can you play a map? For Brink, how many times can you play those maps?
Well, I don't know. I think Portal and Brink are very different examples.
Yeah, no,
because Portal
is
like there's a key. You unlock the key.
Yep.
You know, there's a solution, and once you know the solution, it's kind of like, well, I know the solution now. Whereas Brink, you know, or any multiplayer shooter, you're But I do get tired of running through the same maps over and over and over on anything pretty quickly. But I'm not a typical multiplayer.
I think that's why Valve has the free DLC coming for Portal, the challenge
maps.
Yeah,
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah, and I welcome that for sure.
Yeah,
so
they
are you going back and doing
the
ones you've done?
Yes.
And how fun are they?
I think some of them are fun, and some of them you feel like you're just kind of running through it. Like I said before, like you, some of them, like I just plain forgot like how to solve it.
Yeah.
And that's what's really fun about co-op, especially when you play with a friend, you know, you're chatting on Xbox Live or just Xbox Live. I don't know how PC, I've never played with anyone on a PC before because PSN is down. Like, to me, it's about the social aspect of playing co-op on Portal. It's not necessarily about solving the puzzle as fast as possible. It's about having fun with a friend playing a game that's cooperative where I don't have to worry about someone shooting bullets at my head.
Hmm. That's kind of cool. Actually, there are a number of things that are kind of interesting, but I can kind of imagine it would be fun if I should invest more time in co-op.
Well, the thing about Portal's co-op is that you absolutely, like, there's certain things you just can't solve without you guys working together. Like, there's the puzzles are unsolvable with one player.
Yeah, I mean, that's the intent
yeah,
behind the co-op.
Yeah, and I think that's what's really fun about it, is that you have to work together to get to the next room.
And you can wave at each other.
You can. You can do dances.
It's Warcraft.
It's Warcraft.
That's what we do in Warcraft, right?
Yeah.
You can high-five each other?
Evidently the appeal of dancing does not last, because I read that in our news segment we're going to talk about like Warcraft subscriptions actually going down a little bit. So.
What?
Yeah, I know. So there's something to stick around for in the news later on. And you want to stick around, of course, for Hello Ninja's Fever We Love You coming up at the end of The Warning, which is next. So we got The Warning and Knockout all coming up after this break.
Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games, Gamefly app.
You should call it the Game Flap.
Open your Game Flap.
And as always, the app is free.
Jeff Cannata, master marketer.
Get your hands on a Game Flap.
The must-have app for gamers.
Open your Game Flap.
Yeah, you want to put a game in your app.
Game Flap,
master marketer.
Open your Game Flap.
And stick a game in it.
Put in your Game Flap.
And stick a game in it. A game in it.
That's gotta catch on.
Open up your Game Flap.
Stop it.
Game Flap.
No, Flap is not good.
The Game Flap.
No, Flap is not good. Would you eat a Flap meat salad?
You're not asking people to eat your app, dude. You're eating your app.
The Game Flap. I wanted the Game Flap.
Mix.
Game Flap.
Mix.
Game Flap.
Mix. Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app.
Gamefly app.
You're welcome, Gamefly. You're welcome.
I like how you even called out, I want the Game Flap mix.
Yeah, I did. And my favorite part of that song is when you go, stop it.
Stop it. Yes. All right. So
I should be getting a much bigger salary for coming up with great ideas like that.
It's still a flap.
It's a Game Flap.
Ugh. All right. Hey, so we get to it. We're going to start right off with this one. That's my executive decision. We're going to start right off with M.H. Silver's thing about favorite IPs this generation. And this came up because we were reflecting in the comments for the show before last about what has gone by this generation. I mean, we're pretty far in. We're a few years in. And actually, you know, for the many times as we tend to fall back on the, like, making funny ha-ha jokes about, oh, it's insert name of game with number after it because there's so many sequels and so many things we see over and over. He asked the question, what's your favorite new IP of this generation? And I want to just throw a couple to start, like, the thought process going. Assassin's Creed, which we talked about already. Huge.
Absolutely. Love Assassin's Creed.
And if you're talking about an IP, we could talk about that for, like, a long time. Because not just an era of history, but it's overstory that allows them to go into, like, all these different eras, mm-hmm. play with these different characters, and do it all with this historical relevant, you know, historical backdrop that's really cool.
Yeah.
So I think Assassin's Creed is really, really, really cool. Here's another one that's like a whole other direction. How about Minecraft?
As an IP?
It is an IP. Yeah. So it's a new intellectual property. It's very discovery-based. It's like this super creative canvas that people have really, really taken to right off the bat.
Yeah.
Really, that's crazy. How about Mass Effect?
Mm-hmm.
Andre's nodding yet.
I'm a little excited. I was hoping you were going to say Mass Effect.
Well, so...
Mine would be Uncharted.
How about I stop and let you guys throw out your favorites and why?
Mine would be Uncharted.
Okay.
That's a good one.
Uncharted definitely came a few times. What about Uncharted? What clicks for you about Uncharted?
I think it's the closest gaming has gotten to an interactive film, which isn't necessarily the only thing I want to see gaming do. Mm-hmm. But the fact that we have gotten that close and it feels so much like I'm watching a big summer action film with charming main characters and love triangles and all that stuff that makes me want to go see a fun big budget movie is present here. And yet I also get to run around and explore and shoot stuff. It's great. It's a great IP. Great characters, a rich story. It's great. Everything that makes a good IP.
I think they did a really cool job in Uncharted of creating a similar, although it is sort of formulaic, I guess, in this regard, a similar to an Indiana Jones environment.
Absolutely.
Of main character, supporting cast, but they did a great job with the supporting cast. You know, it's sort of like one of those differentiating points between Uncharted and many of those other character-driven adventure games. Tomb Raider, of course, comes to mind, but other ones as well. They've just, like those other characters, Sully and Elena, and they really add so much to the overall game.
Yes.
And they help make the world so much more interesting because you care about all of them as well. So you're, like, involved and engaged in it.
And they could have easily made the mistake of getting rid of Sully right in the first game.
Oh, yeah. Thank goodness they didn't.
And I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah, I am too.
Going the opposite direction, because that's a game that's very heavily emphasis. There's a heavy emphasis on the story and the characters that are around you. I think Bioshock is a game that's very much about the isolation and the environment. And the only other character in that game is you. Well, it's yourself, and the environment is the other character. Bioshock 2, I didn't really feel the same way about the second one that I did the original. I think they're sort of going a little bit more in that direction with Infinite, Bioshock Infinite, which they're working on right now. So
one of the things I think is interesting, and I'm glad you brought up Bioshock, because I think that's a great IP.
Right.
But I'm not sure that you're not... I think that I agree with you that it was difficult to follow up in that same world,
right,
because there was so much of it that was a combination of character, story, and place that it was hard to duplicate. And
yes.
It felt like it was just trying to duplicate at times in the second one. Infinite's really interesting, because I think the Irrational guys are really freed up, because I think they really like to look at these. I mean, you know, don't forget the subtext. Maybe I'm just thinking. Everyone remembers the subtext of Bioshock is like this really cool societal engineering story.
Yeah.
And I think that was really cool. And I think that when they come to I'm hoping, because we're going to see Infinite at E3, I'm hoping that a big part of it will be like a different way of looking at societal engineering, because now we're on this like utopian cloud city, and I don't want it to be, you know, broken down and falling
apart.
It's going
to be.
You think so?
Yes.
Why so?
I think it's still going to be the aftermath of something terrible having happened, and that's going to lead to it's about, I think if there's a definition of what the IP to Bioshock is, I think it's the idea of someone trying these utopian societies and those failing, and seeing why those things failed.
You know what, you might be right. Yeah, you might be right.
Well, I think with Bioshock, it was, this is the aftermath of what happens when you give people too much power. And in Infinite, it seems like this is what's happening when one element is introduced to a world that everybody wants. It's the grasp for that power. So it's sort of a little backwards if you think about it. The original Bioshock was about what happens after everything's gone to chaos. I think Infinite is about what's going to happen. You'll be there as chaos is happening, because this one character, Elizabeth, is this powerful element that everyone wants to get to. And this is the difference, I think, between the two games. The reason I didn't like Bioshock 2 very much was, whereas the environment was a character in the original Bioshock, I thought that the way that you had to go through the entire world in a very linear fashion in Bioshock 2, it didn't lend itself to the same response, where you would go through an environment and then they would put you on a train and you'd go past it and then you wouldn't really interact with that series of events or that environment ever again. You know what I mean? You would keep constantly being pushed forward. Whereas in the original one, you can keep going back. And you know,
yeah, but you didn't ever really need to.
No, but I mean, it wasn't this isolated world. It didn't feel like a walled garden. It felt like you could make these decisions. I think the funny thing about that game, and it's obviously intentional, is it seems like a game where you have complete control to do everything until the very end, when you realize you never had any control whatsoever in terms of the narrative. That is the narrative structure of that game. It seems like you have all the control in the world, yet you were forced to do this entire thing. Which I think is what's really interesting about that game.
I'm a big defender of the second game, though. I think it's a lot better than most people do.
It was a good game. Yeah, no, I'm not. No,
I'm disparaging it. I'm just saying that this is why I didn't have the same kind of connection with it.
What's so wonderful about, you know, the first game is about this sort of Ayn Rand, every man, you know, the best and the brightest creating the perfect society. And the second one juxtaposes that with the other end of the spectrum is supreme socialism.
It's American exceptionalism. Yeah,
and that's games don't deal with that kind, those kind of big ideas enough, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I love that about the series.
How about some more beefy ones? Gears of War, Resistance. You think they have any?
Well, Resistance is last generation, right?
PS3 debut game.
Oh yeah, you're right. Gosh. Time flies.
PS3 debut game.
Yeah.
So what do you think? How do you think we'll look back on, you know, on those sort of dudes and bros shooters?
Yeah.
The era of the dude and bro. The era of the dude bro shooter.
I think they have a really loyal, hardcore base. Both of those games do. I went to the Insomniac Community Day. You were at that event as well.
I was.
And I think I just really underestimated how many fanboys, you know, that game has. Resistance 3, I'm speaking of. I think that
in the grand scheme of, like, we're talking about, like, the greatest IPs of the generation, I wouldn't put them in the top five.
Mm-hmm. Neither would I. I think that it's very similar to big budget, popular movies of a bygone era, you know, like the Schwarzenegger epics. You'd have Running Man and all these movies that were so popular and made so much money of a specific time. And then 10 years later, it's like, they're laughable. Mm. I think there's going to be some of that with these.
And Running
kinds
Man
of games.
Is laughable in all the right ways, though.
I love that movie so much.
When you look back fondly at a game, do you remember your experience with it or the gameplay? I mean,
the difference?
But I mean, are you going to remember Gears of War because you love the mechanics behind it, or because you loved the experience you had playing it with maybe your friends online, or it introduced you?
Oh, to mine's totally different. I will fondly remember the experience of having fun with it, but I will hate remembering stuff like falling through the freaking the level where you're like being chased by the tickers that run at you, and you're like falling down into like you're in that warehousey thing, and you're like falling into the sewery pit thing underneath it, and then there's like tickers running at you, and you try to get back upstairs.
I think that there's a large portion of what makes Gears of War special is the mechanics, is the active reload system, is how it feels to slam up against cover, which so many games are ripping off.
I was about
now.
To say, you want to talk about it, like, and we're going to talk about IPs in a different sort of vein, like in development community. Boy, Gears of War has dictated a tremendous amount of the development cycle of this generation in shooters.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's a whole other way of looking at it, right?
Yeah.
How about games like Heavy Rain and Alan Wake? Also,
Alan Wake is one that I would put in my top five. I love that IP, and I'm so glad it's not dead.
It is nice that it's not dead, but have you played the two extra chapters?
No, I'm a hypocrite. Because everybody, I'm a hypocrite.
Yeah, and everyone has given both of us shit for not having done that, so yeah, maybe we should man up and go.
Can I put that in my game flap?
You can put that in your game flap. I think that's interesting because those two games show a little bit of another side of development in that they take a third person graphical, like what used to be like they show how the game development cycle has improved to the extent that they look like just action games, and obviously Alan Wake is much more an action game than Heavy Rain is,
sure,
but they still go for a sort of mystery book, a more thoughtful sort of approach than just, oh, go shoot the bad guys who are running at you.
Yeah, and I think that brings up exactly what we were just talking about, whereas is it story IP versus mechanics IP, because I really, as much as I absolutely love Heavy Rain, I don't want a Heavy Rain 2. Mm-hmm. I want those mechanics brought into a different story.
But you said Alan Wake. Alan Wake's story is kind of...
Well,
I really like Alan Wake's story.
Yeah?
Yeah, to be honest with you. There's the build-up at the very end where you get the last line of dialogue and then it you hit with David Bowie. I still remember that exact moment. Yeah. I think that
each act has something like that.
Exactly. Yeah. But I really like that game a lot. Alan Wake, I'm super glad that they're going to continue that series.
Oh, I liked it a lot also. And I really, really thought that the structuring of it in episodes format was very good. I just thought there were parts of the story that just got a little too hokey for its own good.
Yeah.
Maybe. Okay.
It's a perception. I mean,
but I would love those characters to continue. I mean, his sidekick character, whose name escapes me at the moment, Bert or
no? His
agent.
Oh my god! Oh my god!
Yeah, he's great. One of the greatest.
He is
one of the great
Barry.
Barry. Barry. It's a B name.
Barry is
one
awesome.
Of the great video game characters of all time, I would argue. So yes, I want to see those characters push forward. Now, Heavy Rain's characters, I appreciated that mystery. It's a self-contained mystery that I saw the conclusion for. That was my conclusion that I created. Do I want to see those characters in something else? I don't. I don't need that. I don't need Jason or anybody else continuing.
Taking things a little darker, how about Dead Space?
Yeah, we're not the best.
I think we all agreed that we didn't really like Dead Space.
I like Dead Space a lot.
I can appreciate...
We're talking about it as an IP, though.
You know, as an IP, I think it really did something different with the survival horror genre. And personally, the reasons I didn't like it was the reasons a lot of other people really liked it. Was that it was challenging, it was frightening. Mm-hmm. I think it really kind of took like the mechanics of a third person shooter and changed it up and made it be like, well, no, you don't just get to shoot these guys and then you go by them, you know?
The dismemberment thing was very cool. I think they did a really nice job with that.
And I think where
Dead Space shares something with Assassin's Creed is they latched onto a really iconic main character look. Mm-hmm. The design of those main characters in both Assassin's Creed and Dead Space, really, those are the kind of characters that you want to see for hours on end. There's something about those looks that really works.
Well, and also, like Assassin's Creed, super atmospheric game. Mm-hmm. Very atmospheric game. Really get completely sucked into it, which is part of the reason the Startles work so well, is because you are really there, you know, especially in Dead Space 1. You're there on the ship. I haven't played Dead Space 2, but, you know, in talking to Jeff Mattis, who played it. Did you play Dead Space 2?
I have not.
So Mattis played it, and, you know, he said it's, like, even better. All of those things about being engrossed in the world. And, of course, the Necromorphs, I'm not a big fan of the design, but the idea of dismemberment as the mechanic for shooting them, like, that's pretty cool. They mm-hmm. did a good job with that. And we have others. This was also, you know, Platinum did a very interesting job this go around. They had Bayonetta.
Yep.
You could go back to that. Vanquish, also mm-hmm. another nice original shooter and a very different take, you know, with the like speed slide cover mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that reminded me a little too much like Product Number 3, that old GameCube game.
P&O 3.
Yeah, and Gears of War with the cover system as well. Vanquish is a cool game, though.
Another one that came up in this thread was Valkyria Chronicles, which has spawned three games. Four games?
One console game, two PSP games.
And third PSP game coming.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
second. Yeah. There's one console game and two PSP games.
Right.
And then the second...
There's a third PSP game coming.
Oh, a third... Oh, I thought you meant a third PS... Okay.
No. What else is down here? So there's a whole other vein of original IPs, which is all of the... motion control games.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have any idea.
Wii Sports, baby.
Wii Sports.
What about Lost Odyssey?
What about Lost Odyssey?
Is that an IP that's going to sustain? I think it's a very underrated game. I liked it a lot.
Really?
I did.
I had no idea.
Yeah. Are you a fan of the game?
That's another one. I guess I'm going to have to go back and play it. I loved like the atmospheric part of it. I loved the poems, like the memories, like the memory poems were...
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought that was so fucking cool.
I like the characters.
Really?
I like that idea of you live for 1,000 years and it's this experience of you seeing your loss and gain throughout this entire 1,000 years that you're alive. I think that's very cool.
I haven't heard anything about
that. I don't think it sold very well, to be honest with you. What was that, Mistwalker?
Oh, yeah. That was one of the Sakaguchi games. Yeah. I don't think you'll see it again.
I don't think that's ever coming back.
That's interesting, though, that you like that you.
I liked it. Lot
that you took to that one so much. Of course, you're a big Dragon Age fan.
I am. And if
where would you place Dragon Age's IP in one of the things I'm thinking about here is like a, you know, the big overall world, not necessarily just the game.
Man, that's a tough question, because part of me really feels like Dragon Age is very generic, and yet the universe is so rich with lore, and yet it really doesn't have that iconic thing to grasp onto as an IP. It just feels like generic medieval fantasy game number 7, and yet very rich tapestry of races and political intrigue and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly there's going to be a third game, but it wouldn't go up in my top IP, even though I really enjoy the games, because of how bland a lot of the look and feel of that world has turned out to be.
Fair enough. Also in the RPG genre, we talked about Demon's Souls and Dark Souls, so I think mm-hmm. we obviously have to put those in there. Creativity also came to the forefront in many ways. So first of all, one of the big ones that comes to mind is the Media Molecule world of Little Big Planet.
Oh yeah, that's wonderful IP.
That has got to be one of the most interesting creative offshoots of this generation.
For sure.
This whole idea of we're not just building a game, we're building this massive creative set of toys to play with, like really taking sandbox beyond just like here's a world to go do stuff in and here's a world to build your own sandbox creations with.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the only real platforming mascots we've seen in years.
Oh yeah, Sackboy. You know, Sackboy is a tremendous mascot.
Absolutely, and very iconic and very
great point.
Associated with his platform and with the PS3 and
that's a great point. I think that's a character. Really, really
it
good
used
point.
To be the thing, you know? It was Mario versus Sonic versus Crash, I guess.
And so sort of also down that line, with the advent of downloadable content really, you know, coming into the fore in this generation, we have a number of interesting indie games that have, like, opened up our ideas of, like, what we could do creatively. There are games like that game company's Flower, which I thought were really interesting. I don't know that we call them IPs. Would you consider, though, the like overarching approach of a company like Pixel, well, not pick company, but an, of a branding like Pixel Junk as an IP? Is Pixel Junk an IP?
No.
So you wouldn't put that into that same
I
sort
wouldn't.
Of, even though it's like...
It's nice that they brand them all together.
But
and
they definitely
together,
but. Have a theme to all of their stuff, which I absolutely love. I'm a do huge they? Pixel Junk fan.
I mean, I think to a certain extent they do, but there's ones that just really don't fit. You know,
what, like
Pixel
which
Junk
ones?
Racers and Monsters. They it doesn't
Monsters. I could play Monsters any time of the day, any day of the week, and I don't care how many times I've played those maps. I will play them again. I'm really kind of like sad that they haven't put out Monsters 2.
But is that's great? But is there any thematic link between that and Eden? I would say no. I like the general design philosophy of the brand, but I would say as an IP, I don't think you can link those two properties. Really.
No, I agree. I wouldn't call it an IP. I just wanted to say I love them.
I support that.
Okay, so I guess that's going to kind of shoot down my next one about Double Fine and where Double Fine has gone to.
Smaller games.
To smaller places. Games, right. So I guess I'm sort of stretching the boundaries there a little bit, but I really like what they've done as well, you know, with like
I think
Death Spank and stacking.
I think at a certain point now you're just naming every single game that's came out the last couple of years.
I could do that as well.
Yes,
I think
agreed.
We're talking about the best possible games in this generation. I think we've kind of nailed it. I mean, we haven't mentioned Portal. I think maybe people
Portal's a great
Portal
IP.
That there. So, I mean, I think we've mentioned a lot of them. I know that people are listening to this and screaming at their iPod or, you know, other mobile device, whatever they're using. And we're not mentioning something that they feel should be on this list. But, I mean, I really honestly can't think of anything else.
Pretty damn good list.
What about Beyond Good and Evil?
Well, that's last generation.
I thought it was 2003.
Well, yeah, but it came out
private
Xbox.
Previous console, yeah, previous console generation.
Oh, my bad. You smarty pants.
In fact, it hasn't come out for this console generation, really.
And it might not.
Wow.
I mean, unless you count the downloadable
version. Oh, you're talking about the one they keep teasing. You think there'll be a teaser trailer at E3 on Ubi's booth?
I do think there will
next
be.
Being...
I think there will be.
I think
unless they just never talk about it again.
I think James Cameron is still giving a speech over E3.
I'm rooting for it, though. I'm rooting
for
it.
We're all rooting for it. It's just sort of that project that I think it's another one of those ones where like the creative pressure is on so high that the team's under immense amount of pressure to like, what do we do and how do we make it successful this time and also live up to fan expectation? And it's got to be really tough. It has to be really tough. Y'all are smiling knowingly. It's good.
Yeah.
Good smiling knowingly. All right. Let's move on to something else. Soriyama sent a note into Shaq asking about how Sony should be handling the PSN outage. And the piece that's different to what Soriyama brought in that I thought was interesting is this. It says, shouldn't Sony be doing something right now to help people keep people interested in the brand? For instance, Motorstorm Apocalypse came out, and I haven't heard anybody talk about it on any podcast. None of my friends are talking about it, and I wasn't even aware it was out yet until I saw it at the Walmart. So why not send everyone a $10 off coupon for a PS3 game? It would be great right now gesture instead of the, well, whenever we get it back up and running, we'll give you $3 worth of PlayStation Plus and a free game that you'll probably already own. It seems foolish of me to sit there passively watching the goodwill that they've built up since the launch go down the tubes and pray that it'll come back when you get your service back up and running.
I think it's pie in the sky. I mean, they want you to remember what they're trying to do intentionally is when the service comes back up and running, they're going to give you something free on that service. So they force you to go back and use it. They're retraining you to go use that PSN service. I think that this adds to this mentality of like, well, I want something now. Give me something now. When you get that $10 off coupon and you go buy a game and you can't play half of it because some of it's online, how is that going to help your situation? And are you going to remember that you got $10 off the game when PSN starts working again? It's this mentality that I think a lot of people have where I want to be compensated for my suffering immediately. And I just don't
see, I don't
that.
Think, I think you're misinterpreting, maybe we read it differently, but I more read what Soriyama was talking about and it actually, you know, resonated with me that, dude, there's been nothing on the PlayStation blog other than PSN updates since this happened. There's been no interesting updates on any of the games that are going on. There's been no like, here's what we have. And the point about MotorStorm Apocalypse is huge. How awful would it have been to be working on MotorStorm Apocalypse and have your game, after being delayed because of the disaster
Talk
in Japan,
cursed
still
game.
Still come out in the middle of this and then get absolutely no support? And the same thing, like, hey, I get it. Like, now PSN, like, during the first week, sure, they needed to respond to that and treat it in one way. But, like, it's not like people don't own PlayStation 3s anymore. It's like, yeah, okay, our service doesn't work. But isn't it time to also remember that a bunch of people bought SOCOM 4? Maybe it would be nice to hear, like, what's going on with SOCOM 4? What plans are in the works for
afterward? I think they're damned if they do and damned if they don't. Yeah. Because if there was a bunch of updates of, like, hey, guys, there's a bunch of new games out, people would be sitting around going, tell us about the important thing. Why aren't you working on that?
But I mean, they would still be telling you about that.
But my point is that wait until the service is working so you can actually use the features that are built into that game.
But there's so many people who don't use those features.
That's absolutely true. I never use the PSN when I play on PlayStation 3. I can count one or two times in the 2 or 3 years that I've had my PlayStation 3 that I've actually gone on PSN and played with someone.
They have a number of great single-player games. MotorStorm Apocalypse, yes, it has online, but who cares? Like, MotorStorm, the original MotorStorm was a great launch day game, and it didn't have... Like, you could play it all day long single-player. It was a blast. Mm-hmm. And you could play MotorStorm Apocalypse all day long, and it's a blast. Like, you don't... Like, just because their online service is down, it's like they've put the whole damn system in coma. And I think that I understand, given the severity of the situation during the first week, you needed to do that. But at some point in time, don't you still have a lot of people out there who bought expensive consoles and are still PS3 fans and want to know about PS3 games and should be excited about it? They've got all this stuff going on. And instead, it's like, nope, the only thing we're going to tell you is the PlayStation Network is still down. It'll be back sometime.
I understand the concern that people would like to know that something else is happening, but I think their focus right now is fixing the service.
I get that that's their focus, but all those developers that makes the game, they have nothing to do with whether or not that's being fixed or not.
Right, but you're talking about a Sony game. You're talking two Sony games, in fact. SOCOM 4 and both MotorStorm. Those are decisions that Sony Computer aren't...
Well, what about L.A. Noire that's coming out next week?
Yeah.
I pre-ordered a PS3 copy knowing that it was probably going to look so much better on the PS3, but I'm not concerned that the PSN is down because I'm not going to play that game
online. I think
online.
The major concern would be for something like Brink, you know what I mean, where that's an online-focused game and that game is...
So maybe they don't focus on Brink. I mean, that's... You're picking a game that's inherently a multiplayer game and then using it as an example, but like the games I'm pointing out are not multiplayer games. Necessarily. And SOCOM 4 has a big multiplayer community that got cut off right when the game released. Don't they sort of... Wouldn't it be nice to be talking to them? And maybe they are on the SOCOM forum.
This goes against what you were saying before. When you get your free... You were saying this before. When you get your free thing from Sony for this compensation for what happened, are you going to remember or care that you got that free thing? Now you're saying that this situation is any different? If they were going to give you a coupon for a game...
I don't care about the coupon. That's why I was saying you got caught. I don't give a shit about the coupon. I don't care where this... Like, Soriyama's deal about $10 coupon, I could care less about that. I'm surprised that they have so shut down the communication from Sony about anything other than PSN.
Well, and the community is responding, too. There's a lot of people, if you go into the user forums, that are like, I just want to get back to the games. Can you stop talking about the security breach and who did it and which FBI groups are working on it? Like, let's just talk about the games. Like, I think the community wants that back, too.
Well... I think it's a tough choice. I mean, I personally would be very gung ho for getting some games back, and I think that's part of what I think they need to get back to at their E3 message as well, is not get complete. They need to reinstill confidence in the situation, and once they've reinstilled the confidence in the situation, move on, talk about games. They got a bunch of great games to talk about, and they've got NGP to talk about. We have a knockout round to play.
Uh oh, you got medically sealed.
Right. So reminder to. Well, you probably don't know about Knockout Round. So Knockout Round is a new game that our intrepid videographer Ryan came up with, where we have a secret question. I throw the secret question out there, and it's usually like a list question. We go around.
It's more of a topic, really.
It's a topic.
Subjects.
Subject. And you have like a few seconds, few moments to answer your input. And if you get one, that's great. Then it moves on. If you don't get one, you get knocked out. Dave will tell us in our ears when we get knocked out. Dave, are you ready?
Is there like a set time limit?
It's either you have an answer or you don't.
Oh, okay.
It's like, there's no like sitting there baking.
I see how you guys play.
Yeah, you're going to be knocked out in the first round.
Don't worry, I'm going to lose.
All right, so we will throw it to Zav to start. And Zav, first person shooters from the 90s.
Doom.
Andrea.
Halo.
Oh, I'm not going in. Okay. Return to Castle Wolfenstein.
Disruptor.
A Quake.
GoldenEye.
You know, I may have already been wrong.
Wait, Halo came out in 2001.
Did it?
Yeah, because we're on the 10-year anniversary.
Damn it.
Yeah.
I may have already been wrong, too.
Well, then that should have been on the top IPs of this generation. Garnet.
Well, that's not this generation. That's last generation.
You're getting extra time.
First-person shooters from the 90s. Funky Fresh for the 90s.
You got the buzzer from David.
Turok.
Oh, shit.
I loved that game.
Fuck!
Time Splitters.
The original Time Splitters came out. Oh, no, wait.
PS2,
yeah,
right?
I think it came out PS2 in 1998-ish. Yeah.
This game's stupid. No, I won!
Yeah, it's dumb.
Yay!
Let's play something else.
What?
That's good.
I won that one. It's because I'm old. I got a built-in advantage. Thanks, Ryan.
Yeah, you're old.
It's good, though. First-person shooters from the 90s.
All right, it's Hello Ninja from Boston in our music break with Fever, We Love You.
If you're looking for some comfort, well, you're lucky that you've come to the right place. If you're seeking reinvention, here it is, your chance now to escape. If you're feeling sad and lonely, all you think about is how to change the past. Well, we shut it all the windows, so you can't keep on looking back. Because you don't know where to turn. Think you need a bit more schooling. Time is money and you ain't got cash to burn. Did you sleep on smaller demons? Every time the heartache left you empty. If you're a lonely little island, thinking, feeling left you in the darkness at the bottom of the well. When the worst could really happen, it's not your fault, although you feel guilty yourself. It's actually anger, leave you burning. Here's revenge, the answer to your prayers. The golden bullets kill the haters. When you're screaming, life's not fair.
Basile there on the vocals for Boston's Hello Ninja with Anthony Gihan, Will Deeks, and Tim Thompson rounding out the band. And that was their track, Fever, We Love You. So there you go. Check out their act in Boston or on Facebook. And before we hop into the news, we have a special segment.
It's by popular demand.
By popular demand, it's Jeff Cannata's dramatic reading of Cheesecake Jones's The Deer Story.
If you don't know what this was, check out last week's episode or listen to the following dramatic reading. Cheesecake Jones writes, "My sons, ages 5, 7, and 8, were outside playing basketball while I was walking our dachshund on his leash. A deer came out of the woods and stopped about 10 feet from us. It had a wild, panicked look in its eyes. I scooped up my dog, who was barking like crazy, and I told my kids, 'Stay behind me!' Then, without warning, the deer charged me. I could tell it was running, but it seemed like it moved in slow motion.
with the dog in my right hand. I only had my left hand to defend myself. Without thinking, I reached out and grabbed the deer by the antlers. I redirected its force down toward the ground, and the deer stumbled to its knees. Then I moved around beside it and promptly sat on its neck. The deer kicked and struggled, but I had successfully pinned it to the ground. My kids were frozen with fear. I handed the dog to my oldest son and said something valiant, like, "Don't worry about me, kids. Just get to safety and don't come out." Fortunately, they listened to me and ran off. Now, I was alone with the deer, with no idea what to do next. I knew if I ran for safety, it would just try to chase me down. The deer was starting to slip out of my grip, and I knew, with his head and antlers between my legs, I was in some pretty serious danger. Then, suddenly, the antlers slipped out of my grip, and I had no choice but to jump out of the way. The deer sprung to its feet, staggered about 30 feet away from me. He turned back around and glared at me with the same wild look. I knew it was only a matter of moments before he charged me again. As quickly as I could, I took off my belt. Just as he was charging again, I made a rudimentary lasso with my belt and barely managed to loop it around his antlers. After a couple of seconds of tug of war, I got the deer to the ground. This time, instead of straddling him, I got beside him with one knee on his cheek and started grinding his face into the rocky ground. This lasted only a few seconds before he was back on his feet. He sprang up and started to circle me with his torn face dripping blood. The belt had fallen off his antlers when... So I quickly picked it up. When he started to get close to me, I cracked the belt like a whip and tried to yell menacingly. Aah! After a couple of rotations, he decided I was more trouble than I was worth and turned tail. When he was safely in the woods, I went back to where my kids were to show them I was safe. "Look, kids, I'm safe!" That's pretty much it. The whole encounter probably lasted less than a minute, but it felt like a lifetime.
Bravo!
Bravo, Cheesecake Jones. Bravo, Cheesecake Jones. And now I officially don't believe any of that.
Wow, I've never actually sat at a table read before. That was kind of awesome.
You're a very good dramatic reader.
Why, thank you. Thank you.
That was
classically trained.
I feel like we should just turn the whole thing off and go home now. That was fantastic. How are we going to top that with news?
I think Zav can.
Yeah, really? Can you top that with the news?
If you want to talk about securities, we can. Today, PlayStation Network is still down after...
Wait, it might be up tomorrow. By the time tomorrow comes around after recording this, they could turn it on.
Should we make a bet about that?
I get
a little friendly wager.
I'd like to bet that they're not turning it on. Yeah, okay. So yes, we can. If you'd like to take them the side of them turning it on a Friday.
So kicking off with the story that we had last week on the show, there was a report that Dr. Eugene Spafford had made a statement during a congressional testimony or a congressional hearing about security systems, and it's been since learned that he actually wrote a statement that accompanied his testimony that said that he has no information that the protections that Sony had in place were actually accurate. There was no actual indication or confirmation that Sony was running software that was badly out of date and had been warned about that risk. He was offering his opinion based on some things that he had heard on the internet.
Not intended as a factual
statement.
I believe
he looked it up on Wikipedia.
Douchebag.
He might have seen it on Slashdot.
He may have seen it on Slashdot. Beyond that, there was a story that came out of Bitmob. One of their users posted a story that also says that there was claims... Of course, Dr. Eugene Spafford claimed that they were using old version of the Apache web server software, and there was no firmware installed. The Beyond 3D Forums user claims that if you look at the Google web cache, it actually shows that the servers were in the actual update. They had the current version of 2.17. As of March 23rd, meaning that they were running the actual latest software on the Apache web server. Some people are actually claiming that that is inaccurate, and some other services were running at a different server set. So,
do we know that the update is the reason that they were hacked? We don't know that, right?
We don't know. Again, there was another report recently that the congressional hearings, because Sony obviously didn't go to them, they were sort of taken to task a little bit for not going there and showing up and explaining the situation instead of just sending that letter. There was a report also that the PlayStation Network would be expected to come back online fully by May 31st. This was a Bloomberg report that actually has since been retracted. Sony says that the deadline referenced in the Bloomberg article was incorrect, and they have no deadline established for the PSN to be back online. Of course, they hope that it's going to be as soon as possible. But also, companies are feeling the effects of this. Capcom's senior VP, Christian Svensson, actually said that as an executive responsible for running a business, the resulting outage obviously costing us hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in revenue that were planned within our budget. These funds obviously are used in order to fund other games that are in development.
Yep.
So it makes it a big issue. He also made a point that I don't think a lot of people have actually made, that these hackers appear to be trying to punish Sony, but instead they're actually punishing the companies and the users. And it's very hard for anyone to be sympathetic towards their cause.
It's definitely had a cascading effect. You know, right before we came in here, I was reading Twitter, and I guess the Ubisoft was also doing a earnings update. Is that right, Zav?
Ubisoft was doing the earnings update as I left, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So in the context of that, I guess Yves Guillemot said that he was asked some comments, you know, about to give some color from their perspective about how that's impacted them. And one of the comments he made was that it's hurt them on the PSN. This is interesting that he was glad that it wasn't Xbox Live that had gone down, because that would have been a much more serious blow to them, which is interesting for a multi-platform company, but it also carries the thought of, wow, if you're a PSN-only digital distributor, you're in a heap load of shit now.
Yeah.
You've now gone 3 weeks with no revenue stream.
Yeah.
And I know from like some folks who work around in those environments that they're now really concerned about, well, what happens when we flip the switch back on? Are people going to be as likely to come back and buy through this digital portal? Will there be a period of their being gun shy?
Yeah, and I think that's why the welcome back program that they've set up is specifically tiered to people going to the PSN and using the PSN to get free content, because then it trains people back into that mm-hmm. idea of going to their service to get something from them. So maybe they'd get a little bit more comfortable about using it in the future with their actual money.
Well, I think they need to do what Microsoft is doing in their update, is adding PayPal service. I think that was kind of like Microsoft giving a big FU to Sony and saying, guess what, we're going to do an update right now when you can't help anyone, and we're going to add PayPal support.
Yeah, that's not in news, but what you're referring to is, I think that was still something that is rumored. I don't know if they're actually going to do, if they've actually confirmed that the spring update is going to include PayPal to be used on the Xbox Live service in the actual service. Whereas you can actually use PayPal right now on Xbox.com. They've actually, I think they started that about a year ago.
Hmm.
So you can actually purchase points and stuff online from Xbox.com, but not from the actual service.
I guess
itself.
We all feel happy with the security of PayPal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
well, versus Sony's situation now, who would you rather go to if you had the option?
That's true. Yeah. You know what's interesting about this? This brings up a whole nother conversation point that I'm not really ready to go into any more than just throwing it out there for discussion. Of people have oftentimes asked, well, why do Microsoft and Sony even care ultimately long term about retailers like Best Buy and GameStop and all those places? And part of it is that having, you know, like if you're in digital distribution, so if you go into heavily into digital distribution, it continues to grow. Why do they care about having retail partners? Well, one thing that's nice is if you're Sony or Microsoft or Nintendo and you own the platform and you're selling products, then suddenly you become also the customer service, customer point of sale person.
Right.
Why not let someone else hold that?
Yeah.
Why not be the platform holder and be the creative guys, but let someone else handle the logistics of taking people's money and selling them the product?
That's certainly part of the issue. One thing that springs to mind is I interviewed Rod Ferguson from Epic Games recently, and I asked him about whether or not Gears of War 3 would include a download code for any previous map packs, because they did that with Gears of War 2. When you bought Gears of War 2, you got a flashback map pack. He said they might not do it because not a lot of people redeem that code. He said a lot of people don't even realize that it's in there. Even though it's free content, even though there's a sticker on the box that says you get free content, people at the time, this is before EA's Project $10 and all this other stuff where you have to register in order to play online, not a lot of people realize that code is in there. I think that there's a very large user base that if you went completely digital, you would lose, obviously you lose the shelf space, you lose the marketing material, things like that. this is a conversation.
Yeah, I think, but I was just thinking on the theoretical standpoint, like, isn't it nice if you are a platform holder to have someone else engaged in the business of transaction with the customer? You know, having someone else having to deal with all those customer service issues and return, like the whole ball of wax.
Yeah, but I imagine it's a scaling thing too. When you don't have to people a store, and you do it all online. I'm thinking about Steam. I imagine it's a fraction of the workforce that has to deal with a Steam clientele than it does a Best Buy clientele. And the answer to why is money.
Yeah, but I mean, but here, for instance, here you have a problem with your store's credit card and data security. Whereas if it was, say, even if they had just completely done a partnership with Steam and Steam's database had gotten hacked, Sony would still be sort of insulated from that.
That's true.
It's a nice little layer of insulation in retrospect. And I'm not saying it's right. I mean, it'd be nice if you had the economies of scale and like got games for cheaper as well through digital. We haven't seen that either. So
no, we haven't.
It's a complicated question, but it's another part of the equation.
Right. And complicating things further for Sony in this situation is Activision during the earnings call for their Q1 2011 fiscal year. The company referenced loss of high margin revenue and expressed hope that the PSN would be online soon. Of course, Call of Duty, Black Ops, the Escalation Map Pack is supposed to be coming to the PS3 and PC at some point. They were hoping that it was going to come out in this quarter. It still will. And they expressed hope in the investors call that the PSN will be able to, you'd be able to get it from PSN at that point. But they didn't actually specify a date as to when that content was going to be made available.
I suspect more than one developer and maybe some larger ones will definitely alter their distribution plans for the fallout period after PSN comes back up. I think there are probably games that would have come out over the summer, especially downloadable content titles, and that they will be moved back some because there'll be people who are afraid. People just aren't going to go buy it.
I don't know, man. I'm inclined to believe that people just want it back, and they'll have the same purchasing habits they did before. I don't think people are as conscious of it.
I agree with you, Jeff. I think the same thing. I know a lot of PSN owners that really just are like anxious to get it back. Like, I don't think they're trepidatious. I think at this point, you can only be anything but confident for how long it's been down. Like, they've got to, they must be waiting until it's 100% like bulletproof to bring it back up. Because why else would you be down for almost
that's
a month?
That's the argument that something that costs more expensive is better.
Usually it is.
Can't argue with that logic.
That's what she said.
And this report from May 10th on Shaq News that PlayStation Network, of course, is still down up to this point. Sony has not specified a date. And they say that it's going to take at least a few more days for some of the services to come online. Of course, they did say last week that things would have started to get back to normal a little bit. At this point, we're still waiting. So that kind of wraps it up for Sony. They're in a bad situation. E3 is just around the corner. It'll be interesting to see how they respond to it when E3 rolls around. This one's a little weird. APB creator David Jones, used to work for Real Time Worlds, is now working on APB Reloaded. Today it was announced that Jones has been reunited with his previous creation, signing up with Reload Productions, the company who's creating the free-to-play version of APP Reloaded, which is currently in beta. He says that he's extremely excited to join the team and to fulfill the long-term vision for the title that he had when he started working on the game for Real Time Worlds, before, of course, Real Time Worlds and APB both went 6 feet under.
You know, if we had a Price is Right horn soundboard, I would play it right now.
Yeah, I'm inclined to say a snarky comment, and I'm trying to hold back, especially when it's called Reloaded. But
which was a great PS1 game, by the way.
Jones is going to serve as an advisor on the for the game and design experience during critical. He's going to help design the experience during critical design stages of the ongoing development of APB Reloaded. Diablo 3, who's excited for Diablo?
This guy with the thumbs.
Well, Diablo 3, during the investors call, Mike Morhaime said that the company, Blizzard Entertainment, is currently testing the game and started testing the game internally a week ago, and that external testing for the game...
They should have been testing a lot longer than a week ago. We just started testing it.
But I mean, obviously, internal testing for the quality of the title. But external testing is expected to begin the third quarter of 2011, which I think pegs it to the end of the summer.
That I do need to get in my game flap.
Hell yeah.
Seriously.
I I'm excited for my yearly chance to play it at BlizzCon, which is really fun.
Now, they did say, and they've said this on the they said this during the Q4 2010 earnings call, that it is expected that, or it's hoped that if I want to word this in a way that it doesn't, it's not confusing. They said
it's definitely coming out this year.
This is the problem. They said that if neither one of their next two titles, that's StarCraft, Heart of the Swarm, or Diablo 3, is coming out in 2011, then they both will be coming out in 2012. Intimating that maybe intimating that maybe one could come out in 2011, but if it's not ready, it'll come out in 2012.
They're letting a programmer write their press releases now. If this doesn't happen, then that will happen.
It's a dialogue tree in a press release. Like that's it. I think that actually works out really well. Moving on quickly, today it was announced that Mortal Kombat, the trilogy, Mortal Kombat 1, 2, and 3, is coming in a collection downloadable for $10 on the Xbox Live Arcade, PlayStation 3 eventually, and the PC. Actually, it'll be out late summer, and during the late summer stage, they haven't exactly specified when the game is going to be released. But if you look for, if you liked Mortal Kombat, what is this? Mortal Kombat 9, essentially,
nine,
right?
Yeah.
If you like the new Mortal Kombat, go back, play the old ones. The collection will be available soon.
Mortal Kombat 2 was like the best.
I really like Mortal Kombat a lot. And anyone who thinks that Mortal Kombat, the originals suck, can go to hell.
Yes, they can.
Microsoft bought Skype, guys. What? Hey, do you have $8.5 billion in cash?
Their biggest acquisition ever.
Look at my shirt.
Yeah, the pockets look like they can hold a couple bills. Microsoft has announced that they will acquire the voiceover IP company Skype for $8.5 billion in cash. Planned Skype support, of course, for all of their Microsoft devices. And you know they love their devices, including Kinect, Windows Live phones, and Xbox Live.
They don't mention Zune in there anywhere?
Yeah. Zune HD Skype edition coming soon to a store near you, and then leaving that store very soon. So this will connect Skype. They said that it will connect Skype users with established services they already own, like Outlook and Xbox Live, which sounds like a good plan. Of course, I think the conspiracy theorists would say, well, how about my Skype service on my PlayStation Portable? Microsoft said that they will continue to support services or devices that are not under their brand. So iPhone, Mac, PlayStation Portable, you'll still be able to use Skype. They are not Microsoft dollar sign.
It's funny how
like
eBay didn't do shit with Skype. They paid, what, $5 billion for it? Something
$2 billion, I think.
And then Google couldn't get the deal done with them, and now Microsoft does get the deal done with them. It's a very interesting development.
It's very interesting how like happy people are on Shaq News, the comments were. People were really excited about the possibility of adding Skype to their service.
Well, I think one of the things that you can't overlook is people have adopted using Live as a manner of telepresence all over the world. It's been great for keeping families connected and people connected, and the idea of being able to use it through Skype, which people already have a reliance on and know it works, is a great addition to that. I think you'll see it. I think you'll get it integrated into Live pretty quickly once the paperwork's all done and everything's signed and delivered. I bet they'll be integrated in Live pretty damn quickly.
Speaking of quickly doing things, Blizzard President Mike Morhaime announced that they are planning to hasten development on World of Warcraft expansions. He said during an investor's call that what we've seen so far is that people have been consuming this content very quickly, and so the subscriber levels have decreased faster than in previous expansions. It was announced in October 2012 that there were 12 million subscribers to WoW. He said during the Q1 conference call this week that they were down to, it makes it sound like it's a bad thing, but now they're at 11.4 million.
But they lost like somewhere on the order of 600,000 subscribers.
Which is any other MMO's base.
Right. But so, I mean, I'm curious, Jeff, as the hardest core of the WoW group here, but I did play quite a bit of WoW. Do you agree with this theory that really?
It's like any other drug. The longer you're doing it, the more it takes to get your fix and the faster you need another fix.
But expansion packs. See, I think the challenge they run into is that they go for this, is that they've gone for the expansion pack mentality instead of the content patch mentality.
No, they do content patches.
But the content patches have gotten slower and slower. Like, as I did a little research on this when I saw this, and one of the complaints that I read consistently across like both Shaq News and on the WoW forums is that the content patches don't get done quickly enough, and now they're going to like ramp up on expansions and make you go buy expansions rather than doing the content patches.
Well, I don't know if it's a rather than.
Well, no matter how big a company they are, they've gotten to where they're like trying to crank out so much content, there's only so much they can do.
Well, and the way they build those expansions is they build the expansion and it's three-tiered content upgrades. So it's all built in one story arc. I mean, that's what they started with Wrath and carried through here with Cataclysm, is that we know this is the story arc that's going to happen with this, through this expansion. And so the next three content updates carry that story forward. And it's all mostly high-end stuff.
Did you cataclyze?
I cataclyzed. And, I'm a cataclyzer.
And so did it keep you – are you still cataclysmicking?
No, I canceled my account.
So
oh, you're one
was it because
it.
You burned through the – burned through the content, or
there's a lot
content...
of high-end stuff that I never got to.
So another one is not going to help you come back.
I probably will, though. I probably will play 85 to 90 or whatever
it
is.
Were you canceled before the
Cataclysm,
last expansion
yes,
came out?
And yeah. I re-upped, and I re-upped. Played to 85, and I enjoyed the hell out of it, and I played some endgame stuff, but I didn't play all of it. It was much more difficult, which is
like...
not a bad thing, but it required more time commitment and a tighter raid group, and it's just ooh. My lifestyle doesn't.
So it got more hardcore.
Yes.
So whenever you saw
by design,
whenever you saw like a screenshot for it, was it the equivalent of like The Wire when they're like WMDs?
Yes.
Exactly like that.
Pretty much.
But do you think they're starting to get to a point, and there's not enough data yet to know this, and you probably won't know it till it's hindsight. But are they getting to a point where they're starting to see those subscribers bleed off? And now they're going to have to say, well, okay, in order to bring the subscribers back, we got to do another expansion because they come back for expansions. They won't come back for a patch.
I think it's diminishing returns, for sure.
And
I think
how many times can they play that card?
Well, it's weird because if you're down to 11.4 million, that's still like a titanic success.
Right.
Well, I think you also have to remember that PC gaming today has a different audience than it did when WoW first came out. I mean, if you think about the generation of gamers that's like just getting into middle school now... You know, like how many like desktop PC gamers are there?
Well, WoW kind of saved PC gaming. I mean,
for the generation,
flawed statement, but it's kind
of
true.
Well, I know, but like you look at the demographics. Like, I mean, what I would like to see like the breakdown like of the people are the people that came back to WoW, like people that started with it, or how many people were new that came into WoW for Cataclysm or the last expansion pack.
Well, I don't think you come in for these expansion packs.
I think some people do. I think some people are like, oh, what's all this hubbub about? I want to get in on this.
I think
WoW.
There's a few. I think there's definitely an audience for that have maybe never experienced.
If you come
WoW.
In now, how much do you have to buy to get into WoW now?
You have to buy a lot, but all WoW. The old stuff is so cheap. They give it to you for basically free, $5 for most.
Okay,
of,
so all those prices are super low now.
Yeah, they do deals like that. Yeah,
it's such a tremendous undertaking to me. Like knowing what it took to get to 60. I can't.
Well,
and
again,
I know that
of the Cataclysm update was making that an easier.
Even rebalance. There's so much content to get through.
But you say that like it's a bad thing.
There are so many raptor skins to bring back.
Yeah. But see, Blizzard's not dumb either. You know they're ramping up on whatever their next MMO is going to be. Yeah. And they know, you know, they can feed this beast as long as they want. And then at a certain point, they're going to make WoW free to play. And that's going to juice it again.
During the investor call.
You say
call,
that like that's a certainty. I don't know that that's a certainty.
Oh, I think it is. I don't think
during
it's soon.
During their investor call, they specifically noted a next-gen MMO.
Oh, yeah, Titan. It's like it's been in the books.
In the books for a long time. Yeah.
But I really think that around the time Titan is starting to get some steam and WoW is kind of waning, all they have to do is go, oh, yeah, you want to come back to all the characters that you have online? It's free to play now.
So saying this then, we at least agree, is an opening chapter to an end move.
Perhaps. I think that what they're doing at this point is they're seeing how they can stave off, you know, max exodus from all of their users at this point. So when it comes to Titan, they know sort of they have a plan or a plot of like, this is the trend of WoW. We can kind of follow the same sort of thing and see what works in the future and what works in the past and try to tweak their plan in terms of what's going to happen with their future titles.
Interesting.
I would say a 6, 7, 8, 9 year run at that kind of level.
Oh, it's amazing.
The game came out in 2004.
Dude, we all know.
It's insane.
WoW is amazing. No argument. I'm just saying that like ramping up the speed of – I think that it's to me a little bit of an early – not desperate, but an early like concern move when I think that there are other ways that they could – I think they could lock people back into it much much more economically and easy. And also, I'm also concerned, like, if they start cranking them out, can they maintain reputation for, like Blizzard doesn't crank anything out.
We
it's
also
like saying,
don't know
it's like Valve saying, Valve's going to crank out the next three episodes of Half-Life. Yeah. Really?
Right. We also don't exactly know what it means. It could mean that instead of one expansion per year, they do that one giant expansion in half in two sides.
Well, that would
two
stink.
Parts to it. Well, they're also releasing StarCraft three times, right? all right, so let's move on to Call of Duty Black Ops. Again, during the investors call, Activision announced that it was the best-selling game of all time in terms of dollars.
Crazy.
On the Xbox 360,
did they
PS3,
add a sound effect when they said
PC.
That?
Like,
all
yeah,
time,
I think it was
time,
like
time,
no, it
time.
Was like Bobby Kotick was on the
Shwing.
Call. This is specifically the US and Europe. Obviously, another huge success for them would be the map pack, First Strike, the first map pack for Black Ops that was released on the Xbox 360. They say, quote, shattered Xbox Live records with 1.4 million sales within the first 24 hours.
That's amazing.
That is nuts.
People
it is
like
kinda
their
nuts.
COD blops.
So after all of that, don't you figure with all they're talking about, and I know that like this is the next story on the list, with all they're talking about the next Call of Duty getting ready to be announced, that after the way the PSN thing has gone, after how profitable the relationship with Microsoft has been, that they're even going to go steps further to tightening that relationship with Microsoft?
That's a good question.
How do you mean? I don't understand.
Well, so one of the things, they had this quote about the next Call of Duty is going to have an unprecedented online experience or some nonsense like that. What is it like?
Yeah, that's specific to a company they've just established internally in order to create a digital platform within their games. I don't know. Maybe I don't know if you're seeing that as like a slight to Sony's current situation.
No.
No, it's going to be Call of Duty for Facebook.
That's all we need.
Call of Duty and friends.
Ask five friends to contribute to your grenade stash.
Exactly.
Publish to your wall. Skip. Yeah.
I'm going to poke you with bullets. At a high velocity.
No, what I'm saying is that, like, so far what's happened is that Call of Duty did become a console title. So it already gave away its, like, PC background to a large degree, right? Mm-hmm. And then they've gone multi-platform, you know, on paper. But we know that, obviously, they've had this great relationship with Live. They've done these exclusive deals for all the DLC packs.
Right.
And now, you know, I don't see Microsoft being super loaded. You know, like we were talking about, like, what's Microsoft going to show on stage? They got Forza. Maybe they do, like, this Halo thing because it's an anniversary year for Halo.
Gears.
They got Gears, which obviously, so they have, but that's not a very thick heavyweight. And what they've done in years past is they've always been great with third-party stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they, like, bring out Rock Band. They bring out...
The Beatles.
Right. And I just
Tony
think that
Hawk.
I think that they're going to put the pedal to the metal on like really emphasizing that the Xbox 360 is the Call of Duty machine.
I just wonder if we're going to see Skittles the kitten again. That's what I am waiting for. You know, you bring up a good point because the last two E3s, Microsoft has featured Call of Duty. There was Modern Warfare 4 and then Modern Warfare 2. And then Black Ops last year. And then there's news that a new Call of Duty is going to be detailed in the coming weeks, something you could see at E3. Again, during this investor call, they talked for a long time.
Were your ears tired?
It was
all
super
the investors
tired.
Are like, tell us again about how much money you made on the COD blobs. Please tell us again.
Call of Duty franchise is going to continue, ladies and gentlemen. Surprise, surprise. And information on the next title is going to come in the coming weeks. As expected, they did peg the release for the next game in the fall. And as Garnet mentioned, it's going to include an unprecedented online experience. What this means is Activision has started they announced this in their last quarterly call that they've established Beachhead Studios, which is going to develop a digital platform that, is going to add an unknown level of in-game integration on consoles and invest into the community to further monetize the Call of Duty brand. However, they did mention that this means that they are not going to charge people for the online service.
Yet.
So people need
There'll
to
be pieces.
Chill out.
And that's the least of the announcements already in this exciting, exciting pre-E3 period. Mm-hmm. Lay it on us.
A couple of game announcements real quick. Soul Calibur 5 was just announced by Namco Bandai. Hitman Absolution, the fifth game in the Hitman series, is coming soon. Alan Wake.
Yes.
Going
something.
To be getting a sequel.
Yes.
Something. Not Alan Wake 2.
Not Alan Wake 2. Not
matter.
DLC. Something Alan Wake
That's
related.
That's all I need to know.
I'm assuming it's kart racing.
Barry's song.
I'm ready for Arlen Wake kart racing.
Arlen Wake kart racing, I'd be all over that, like a fat kid on a pancake. Also,
I'm all over Soul Calibur 5.
I just wanted to,
Soul Calibur 5 I'm excited about simply because I just love Soul Calibur. Like,
I do too.
And I am worried that like it is going back to the well, and I've thought that before. And every time I'm like, I'll play more.
We've got these rejuvenated Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat franchises.
Yes.
Do you think it will be similarly?
They only showed art.
They showed bad art.
Yeah.
Showed art that made me go.
It was a little cringe.
Dude, remix of that song makes me go,
But
that was not what that sounded like.
But
boys.
I have such affinity for this franchise, and I want it to have a resurgence of a similar vein. Do you think it will be just...
It's the right team. It'll be fine.
All right.
It's the core team. They know what they're doing.
Did you hear they're making the swords shorter?
What?
Short swords?
Yes. I'm not joking. Short swords. Both of them.
I can make a DLC Viagra joke, but I'm going to skip it. The last announcement, of course, revealed last night on GTTV is Starhawk. Ladies and gentlemen, the Warhawk series is going into space.
In space.
Now, what do you think that means that they're announcing this game now? A game that I think people will, regardless of whether or not there's a single player campaign, that the game, they're announcing this game now while they're still having their online issues. Do you think, because it is associated with an online experience?
Oh, I think that it's sort of Sony has an interesting approach to this year as far as E3 goes. You know, this is a weird year for the big three. Like, Nintendo has already basically swung the big bat, right? And we're going to show a new piece of hardware. Microsoft, we're all like throwing our hands up like, what are they going to show? I mean, they got Gears, they got Forza, but like that doesn't sound like enough to completely be the full plate. And then there's Sony, who like, you already know all these fucking games and NG. Like, we got NGP, we got Resistance, we got Ratchet and Clank. Now we're going to add more games to it. And I think that part of their strategy is to have all of this stuff out there, so then they're like really getting you already like salivating by the time they show it to you at E3.
This was what I was sort of hinting at last week when we were talking about, like, if you have this big online shooter, how are you going to announce it at this point if you're having all these problems? I think it's very interesting that they're doing it now. It'll be interesting to see how it works out when the actual
maybe they're doing it to just remind people, hey, you know, we're coming back real soon, so get excited because we have lots of cool stuff coming up.
And is it like out of sight, out of mind, do you think? Do they want to just like, yeah, we know we have problems, but here are the games that we're working on. We'll figure that out later.
That was what I was saying they need to get to. They need to get back to talking about games. And in this case, this is like Warhawk was successful. People stay playing it for a long time. We're going to do it bigger and better. Sounds like they're going to do a single player campaign that's going to come out on Blu-ray, like a, you know, like a box release without any, like, there's no like question about that. There's no this like, is it going to be digital? No, they're like, no, it's going to be a disc-based game. Mm-hmm. So sounds cool. I'm excited. Definitely stoked.
Yeah.
Definitely stoked.
I liked Warhawk.
I liked Warhawks too. You want to do some finishing moves?
I suppose.
You suppose?
I haven't thought about mine yet.
Well, you think about yours real quick. I will give you all three time to think.
I'm not going first this time.
I'll go first. I will bite the bullet and go first. All right, finishing moves. Do we have sound? Do we want to do sound? We haven't done sound. She's got the sound. Finishing moves.
Finishing moves.
My pile of shame grows every damn week. And then there are reminders of stuff that's been sitting in it for a long, long time. Like, next week, Chrono Trigger comes out on the Wii Virtual Console. And I made the mistake of commenting that I haven't played through Chrono Trigger. And it's sort of sitting there taunting me, and I know I need to go back to it, so I'm going to try and go back to it. However, I am going to take the advance of the Twitterati and go back and try and play the DS version that I bought after I bought the PS1 version. Like, I bought the game a bunch of times, but just never stuck with it. The problem for me about these sort of games, and especially the DS, is that my DS, I always wind up like setting the DS down and then not coming to it. I didn't even power through DQ9. So that's my finishing move is it's coming out again. If it doesn't work, maybe I'll buy it on Wii because I do sort of see myself just sitting back on the couch, propping my feet up, and I don't know, playing a great role-playing game. It's always great to sit back and play a great role-playing game. Zav, finish them.
Mine is I'm going to pull down my shades and put on my Frankie Says Relax t-shirt because I think everyone needs to calm down when it comes to reviews and personal opinions. When you see something that you don't agree with, it's not a personal slight. There are opinions that people have on specific games that you may not share. A great example is the What was that game that came out that everyone, it was
the
all
one?
Broken? No, it was the game that was all broken and everyone loves that Shane wanted you to play, Jeff.
Oh, yeah.
Deadly Premonition.
Deadly Premonition. Some people loved it. Some people hated it. Everything's based on opinion when it comes to reviews and previews. You need to calm down. No one's going to write a preview, say a game's not good, drive to your house, and then punch you in the face. Chill out.
Good call. Andrea, finish him.
This is an homage of some of my former coworkers who I miss dearly. And it's a statement that was made by an administrator at a former job I was at. I'm going to leave it at that. Yours is not to ask why, but to do or die.
Whoa.
Damn. Brought it all poetical.
I don't have a finishing move, so I'm gonna steal something from Andrea and wish somebody a happy birthday on Twitter. His name is Simon Parker. He was born in 1983.
He's 28.
Yay for
happy
him.
Birthday.
That's not a finishing move. That is so lame.
I was unprepared for finishing moves. I apologize.
He's going to drive to your house and punch you.
I am so going to drive to your house and punch you. Don't you have like a board game you could have promoted or something?
Oh, dude, there's like, yes.
So there you go. Finish him with a board game. I'm just here to help you out.
There's too many. You know, I just played this week. I played Tigris and Euphrates for the first time.
I saw the pick.
Yes. Very classic Renner Kenizia game. Very almost abstract, almost like Go or chess. But it's set in the Egypt on the Tigris and Euphrates, obviously. Really mind-bogglingly complex and awesome. Highly recommend that. I want to get you
Number of players?
I think up to four.
About how long to play?
Probably a while, about 2 hours, probably at least.
But worth the investment.
Yeah, it's great. He's one of the probably the top designer of board games in the world, and there's many games of his that I could talk about. That's a great one.
Good deal.
Yeah, and a lot of his games are on iOS now, so you could check out Money, Raw, Battleline, great games.
And what was the name of the game designer again?
Renner Kenizia.
All right, very cool. See, I told you you had a finishing
move
in you.
That was so much better. Why didn't you tell me that earlier?
I just like to let you sweat a little bit.
Damn you.
You know, it's good. Now I got you in a good mood to go film some Totally Rad Show, which you can watch every day of the week on totallyradshow.com. And you have to go tell Dan happy birthday for us.
I will.
Hope he like had fun. Did you guys like throw him anything special on the show?
Yeah, we gave him a 6-week magic course at the Magic Castle as a birthday present, which
wow.
also gets him a membership so he can take us to dinner and things.
That's
awesome.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
That is very well done. And Andrea Renee, who you can catch up with on Clever 2Vs.
Yes, Clever Games, my new channel. You can follow me on Twitter at Andrea Renee. You can follow Clever Games on Twitter at Clever Games. We have an awesome YouTube channel we just launched. Please come visit us.
And of course, we'll have all of that for you in the show notes, which you can always get on shacknews.com. It's also where you can join the conversation with myself and Jeff and Zav D'Amatos. You do anything fun this weekend? You want to say goodbye before we like log out of here?
No, Canada just had an election, and I don't even know what happened. So, I think I'm officially American. Go get some sushi and
yay
beer.
For apathy.
All right, that's it, folks. Thanks very much to Boston's Hello Ninja. We will have their Facebook and information on how to pick up their latest EP also in the show notes. And that is all. Thank you, Brooklyn. Also, you can still donate to her life cycle ride, and we have the links to that on the page as well. That's it. That's your Weekend Confirmed. Thanks very much for joining us. Until next week, we are Ghost. The new me can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.